The news, the government, determined to put through this digital ID card, although it would appear most of us are against it. Chief Secretary of the Prime Minister, Darren Jones.
It is the ability to log in to the gov.uk app and then prove who you are. And it's the proving who you are bit which makes all the difference.
He will join us later in this hour. Remember conversation yesterday about the so-called Al-Quds March this weekend and another government minister, Sarah Sackman, KC.
Those expressing support for the malign regime in Iran and the IRGC and its proxies have no place in our society. They shouldn't be on the streets of London.
That has now been banned. And speaking of London, another tube strike on the way. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Home Secretary has approved a police request to ban an apparently pro-Iranian regime march in London. Shabana Mahmood says the ban on the Al-Quds rally on Sunday was necessary to prevent serious public disorder. Organisers insist the event is always good-natured and peaceful. Shadow National Security Minister Alicia Kearns spoke to LBC before the announcement.
This is a march that was established in Iran, and essentially it's called Quds Day, Al-Quds Day, which means Jerusalem. And essentially it happens on the last Friday of Ramadan. In Iran, it is used as a celebration of the regime. And we have seen this on UK streets, and it's been labelled essentially horrifying, heartbreaking, anti-Semitic, hate marches.
The Foreign Secretary says she's emphasised close coordination on Middle Eastern security during a call with her US counterpart. Yvette Cooper's conversation with Marco Rubio comes as the warship HMS Dragon travels to Cyprus. It set sail yesterday after an RAF base on the island was targeted by drones nearly 2 weeks ago. Defence journalist and former NATO planner Philip Ingrams told LBC he thinks criticism for its slow deployment is fair.
In the initial stages of the American attacks, the biggest threat to the sovereign base areas of Cyprus and the strategic capabilities that are there, as well as the rest of Cyprus as a separate country, was the ballistic missile threat. And the only way of countering that ballistic missile threat is through a Type 45 destroyer. It should have been there as Donald Trump was carrying out his first air attacks.
The first documents relating to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington could be released by Downing Street later. There have been questions over how the PO was vetted and what was known about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Lord Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing. Reforms of the court system in England and Wales have passed their first hurdle in the Commons. They include controversial proposals to limit some jury trials to address rising backlogs. And the next series of banknotes will feature wildlife instead of figures from British history. It's part of their first major redesign for 50 years. The public will have a say on which animals will appear on the 5, 10, 20 and 50 pound notes, although the final decision will lie with the Governor of the Bank of England. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,412. It closed up 162 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some bright spells developing later, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after seven on Wednesday, the 11th of March. Setting sail for the Med at last. HMS Dragon leaves its dock in Portsmouth on its way with around 200 crew on board. We'll be asking, is it too little too late? And what does it say about our state of readiness? And indeed, the Ministry of Defence stewardship of defence of the realm. In other news, a people's panel to be set up by the government. What exactly is the House of Commons if they're not our representatives? But this is on this rather controversial issue of an ID card. They're still saying that it will benefit all of us, although when asked exactly how much it's going to cost, it would seem they have no idea. We'll be speaking with the relevant minister a little later in this hour. Elsewhere to Birmingham, where it is a real load of rubbish.
all-out bin strikes, backed-up bins, and rats the size of cats. It's been a bad year for Birmingham, and I'm LBC's Luke Shanahan with the latest from the Second City.
To Switzerland, where it is reported at least six people have lost their lives, five injured, two of them seriously, after what would appear to be a deliberate act, someone dousing themselves with gasoline or with petrol and then setting it alight. Footage on social media. And we'll give you a report from Switzerland. Back here in the UK, that Al-Quds march that we discussed yesterday and have done with a number of ministers has been banned. Is that the right decision? And back to the Iran conflict. Here's Israel's leader of the opposition, Yair Lapid, speaking with journalists early this week about the need to support Israel against the Iranian regime.
We are standing united against the Iranian regime, against this existential threat. We have to fight this regime until it's gone.
And he will join me later in the show to talk Trump, Keir Starmer, defense, and all matters Middle Eastern.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The chant as regards HMS Dragon of Why Are We Waiting was replaced with We Are Sailing, and there to witness it, LBC's Benji Heyer, who joins me now. Benji, good morning.
Nick, morning. It is one of the most advanced warships in the world, according to the Royal Navy, purpose-built for anti-aircraft, anti-missile warfare, and as you say, HMS Dragon finally setting sail to the eastern Mediterranean. That moment, a long-awaited one, because it has been a full week since HMS Dragon was ordered to be deployed and 11 days after the drone attack on the RAF base in Cyprus that it's being sent to defend. It will be the UK's first and only warship in the region when it arrives. Reform Party leader Nigel Farage, who was visiting Pompey just before the departure, told me it's humiliating that it has taken so long.
We need to defend British sovereign territory in Cyprus. We're incapable of doing it. I'm talking to you in Portsmouth, just next to the harbour. It'll be a fortnight. A fortnight! We've left undefended a British military base. Without America, we are defenceless. We really have made a terrible, terrible error.
Speaking of the US, President Donald Trump suggested it's a little bit late to be sending ships. So why the delay on our end, Nick? Well, this time last week, HMS Dragon was disarmed. It was undergoing what one defense minister describes as a variety of different bits of maintenance. And then also cost-cutting is to blame, at least according to union officials. They say that an around-the-clock staffing model was replaced by a weekday-only, strict 9-to-5 operation in order to make savings. That claim, though, has been disputed by the Ministry of Defence. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, praising the, quote, remarkable effort of Navy crews who worked tirelessly, 22 hours a day, he says, to get the boat ready. One of those on board, Jacob Birch, a gunner who was lining the deck with 200 other sailors as they embarked on their mission yesterday, and his wife, Catherine, was stood dockside to wave him off.
It's exciting because it's what he's been training for, but I'm pregnant and we're quite sad because I don't know when he's going to be back.
She hopes, Nick, that he can stay safe during what the head of Britain's armed forces calls the most dangerous period in decades as questions are raised about the Royal Navy's preparedness in this time of war and indeed Britain's reputation on the global stage.
Benji Heyer reporting more on what's going on in the region with Greg Karlstrom, who's with The Economist. That's later. But first, let's talk about the application, or at last the application of defence from the Ministry of Defence. And just to point out, as we've struggled to send that destroyer to the Middle East, France is sending 8 frigates, which is more than our entire fleet in the United Kingdom, 2 amphibious helicopter carriers, and its Charles de Gaulle aircraft carrier. Our 2 aircraft carriers are both still tied up at Portsmouth. So what does it say? Lieutenant General Sir Simon Mayles, former Deputy Chief of the Defence Staff and former Senior Middle East Advisor at the Ministry of Defence, and joins us now. Sir Simon, we wish nothing but Godspeed and safe return to all the personnel deployed, and I'm sure you agree with that. But what does it say about the MOD stewardship here? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, you're 100% right. We do wish Godspeed to all our servicemen and women on their way out to any war zone. And those who are in the war zone at the moment, who have been rather tragically left underprotected by their own government. I always have a saying, Nick, which is when you start to think small, you start to act small. And when you start to act small, you start to be treated as small. And I think there are many, many armchair generals, admirals, you name it, who will be making have made this point incessantly over the last few weeks since this crisis began. That is a tragedy of real long-term reputational damage to the country, that we have been revealed to be so unready to even just support our national interests. None of us are arguing that we should have been taking part in the offensive operations against Iran, but all of us have said we are woefully underprepared to meet our obligations and our status as a inverted commas, great power, member of the Permanent Five, lead member of NATO, close ally of the transatlantic, and as my good friend Simon Diggins spoke to an earlier, predecessor this morning, defending friends who we are under obligation to defend, under alliance.
So Simon, there is no bright lining,
silver lining to this at all. But I'm glad we're doing something now. This will go on for a long time, second and third order consequences, and it's good at last that we're putting ourselves in position to have options and take control of our own destiny rather than relying on other people.
So, Simon, you have prowled the corridors of power at the Ministry of Defence. John Healey, the Defence Secretary, telling the public that the crews have worked tirelessly 22 hours a day. They've performed a Herculean task. He has to say that, doesn't he? What is the reality? Do you imagine behind closed doors there are meetings going up and say, OK, lads, how do we drop the ball so badly?
I hope to goodness there are. Again, as you say, Nick, I've walked those corridors. I know the compromise.
I use the word prowl, Sir Simon. You've prowled the corridors.
I've prowled even the corridors. Thank you very much, Nick. Pamper-like.
Yes.
None of us are naive about the pressures of politics, domestic politics, the media, public support, money in particular. And, of course, I hate to say it, the instincts of this government, which are on almost every issue to drop the ball on defending British sovereign national interests and deferred on upwards to some nebulous idea of international lawyers convention in the sky, but all of this could have been foreseen. The key was that if Iran didn't buckle, there was a very good chance it wouldn't. The Americans, the Israelis were going to strike, and the Iranian regime would almost undoubtedly lash out. All of that was known, and still nothing was done. It was business as usual in terms of funding or the refit maintenance project, etc. And we know what the debates are like in that cabinet, and none of them will be for foreign adventures. None of them will be particularly supporting the military. None of them particularly interested in Britain's reputation globally. And I think the British public really had enough of this.
So, Simon, lastly, reminding everyone you served as senior Middle East advisor at the MOD, you said earlier that it will go on for a long time. Can you stare into a crystal ball? What happens next? For how long will this go on? What is the ultimate outcome, Sir Simon?
Well, again, I'd support Simon Diggins. We wouldn't have wished to start a war. We knew if it was started, we would be involved, back to our earlier points. I think we need to, hopefully the Americans will see this through and the Israelis. It's a foul regime. But the issues of blocking the Straits of Hormuz, a lot of it to do with insurance rather than physical blocking. And our friends will look to us for long-term support. So we need to be prepared. And if you are properly prepared, you have options. And if you have options, you've got skin in the game and you can start to at least influence other people's decision-making as well. But the key is to steel ourselves for a longish, in contemporary terms, a longish campaign here.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you, Sir Simon. Think small, you're going to act small. Lieutenant General Sir Simon Mayall, former Deputy Chief of the Defence Staff and Senior Middle East Advisor at the Ministry of Defence, 13 after 7. Let's get to Greg Karlstrom now, Middle East Correspondent for The Economist, currently based in Riyadh, joining us from there. What is the word in the region then, and what is the latest developments, I understand, in the Strait of Hormuz? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Right, the focus is very much on the Strait of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf. This morning, the Americans saying overnight that they believe the Iranians have started to lay down some naval mines in the Strait. Not a large number, but an attempt to physically block traffic through the Strait. There was a bizarre incident last night where the U.S. Energy Secretary Christopher Wright tweeted that the U.S. had started escorting tankers through the Strait And then about 10 minutes after that, deleted the tweet. And it turns out those naval escorts are not yet taking place. So, you know, almost 2 weeks into this war, the Americans still trying to figure out how to get this naval mission underway to bring tankers in and out of the Persian Gulf. And meanwhile, huge concerns in energy markets about not just the mining, but reports in the past hour that a ship in the Persian Gulf may have been hit by a projectile.
Do we get a sense, it's been reported in some UK media, Greg, that we sense that Iran might be getting to the end of its supplies of missiles and drones. Is there any reality to that in your view?
I think we need to differentiate between missiles and drones. I think when it comes to ballistic missiles, particularly the longer range ones that are being used to hit Israel, there are signs that Iran is at least running out of capacity to fire them, that its launchers may have been damaged or destroyed, that some of these missiles may now be entombed underground in the bunkers where they are being stored. And so we've seen a significant drop in missile fire from the start of the war. The drones, I would say, are a different story. They are very cheap and very easy to produce. You can manufacture a Shahed drone for about $35,000 a pop, and they require only very simple components, nothing sophisticated. So the Iranians probably have thousands, if not tens of thousands of those available. And there's not that bottleneck around launchers as there is with missiles. They're easier to transport, they're easier to deploy. And I think it's going to be more difficult to try and neutralize the threat from drones.
Thanks to the view from the region. Greg Karlstrom is Middle East correspondent for The Economist, joining us from Riyadh. And now over to you, the reaction. Too little, too late, or do we, of course, justly be proud of our servicemen and women as they sail off to battle? We'll get your reactions on that. Later in this hour, the government's defence of those ID cards. It would appear the last public, public opinion polling that was done, had it as 65% against the government trying to turn that with what's called a people's panel. And then here in London,
tube drivers in London are to strike across 12 days starting later this month in a row over a four-day working week. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the details.
It's 7:16 now. LBC News headlines then from Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, has granted a police request to ban an apparently pro-Iranian regime march in London. The US military says it's destroyed 16 Iranian mine-laying ships near the vital shipping lane of the Strait of Hormuz. And the first documents relating to Lord Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington could be released by Downing Street later. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some bright spells developing later. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, London Northwestern services aren't running between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey. It's because of overhead wire problems, and Chiltern Railways are delayed to and from Marylebone by about 15 minutes, and that's after a signal failure. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line, but it is back up and running now, but that's the entire line, and also minor delays on the Bakerloo line. On the roads, very slow on the M1 southbound, heading towards Junction 11 at Dunstable South. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed, and then two problems on the A13 westbound. Firstly, there are delays to the M25 because a car's broken down, but there's also been an accident just after the Pitsea flyover.
LBC.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers, dog lovers, bait clubbers, banger dancers, baby ravers, potters. Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, Just ask Zoopla.
Go from someday to sunny days in Greece with package holidays from £329 per person. So stop dreaming of souvlaki. Stop scrolling crystal clear beaches. Search EasyJet Holidays and get your holiday in Greece sorted today. Get out there. Selected dates April to September. Limited availability. Adult protected. T's and C's apply.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure, or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 7, David, you're going to be the first caller. Malcolm, you're in line as well. Come to you in just a moment. Tell you the front pages you're waking up to, or for some of you, you're going to bed to after putting in your shift. Pictures of HMS Dragon departing from Portsmouth. Front page of the Daily Telegraph. Heading out to dot at last. Fair comment, I would suggest. And there's the front page, the picture on the front page of The Guardian as well. There's on the front page of the Daily Mail. This story has moved on, and we're going to give you an update on that. Ban pro-Iran hate march, says the Daily Mail. Well, they will be delighted to know that that has gone ahead. And on last one, the front page of the American bombers take off from UK RAF base. Trump vows biggest Iran blitz. Go to the LBC app, where you can get all the details of the Al-Quds hate march in London being banned by the Home Secretary. And we're going to be talking more about that a little bit later in the show. And lastly, for the front page of Mail Online, this is the Iranian football team that was down, female football team that was down in Australia for a tournament. 7 have defected. The rest, says the online, reluctantly board a plane. What horror awaits the Iranian brave women footballers? There are reports that the ones who have returned were told that they didn't, there would be repercussions or consequences for their families. So the young women who decided that they would seek asylum in Australia, that's a very brave decision, because when you see what the Iranian regime is capable of, well, I'll just go dot, dot, dot there, shall I? David's in Enfield. What have we learned about the Ministry of Defence over the HMS Dragon fiasco? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hope you're well.
Good, thank you. Yes, sir. You're good. On the radio.
Yeah. I wanted to make 2 points. We're an island nation of 70 million people, and we rely on the high seas as obviously a first line of defence, national defence.
Yes.
So it's essential to having a strong navy. It's essential to the government's duty to keep our nation secure. But secondly, very importantly, we also rely upon the sea for a large volume of our vital imports. 45% of our energy comes by sea, and 40% of our food is imported.
Yep.
So it's a threat, even if we don't have a war situation, because if a hostile power wanted to bring us to our knees, they could blockade the British Isles from the sea, and who would prevent it?
Well, I'm rather concerned about the state of our Navy, indeed the whole Ministry of Defence. If you look at the letters page of the Daily Telegraph, and a former Prime Minister always used to say, if they wanted to know what Middle England was thinking, they would read the letters page of the Daily Telegraph. That would be one Tony, now Sir Tony Blair. And in the letters page, a gentleman called Rear Admiral Philip Matthias, who's retired, points out, across areas of defence, France has more fast jets than Britain, a nuclear deterrent that is entirely sovereign capability, unlike ours, which is reliant on American support. The only conclusion? The Ministry of Defence is grossly inefficient and not fit for purpose for our defence. I think the Rear Admiral is right on just about every point there, isn't he?
Yeah, there was a debate in the House of Commons last year about the readiness of the Navy, and laid out there were only actually 20 ships available to deploy anywhere, and the interesting thing was, in the Navy, in Naval Command, there are 14 Rear Admirals and above for 20 ships. So it seems, you know, this is very important, cause, and we're spending $60 billion a year on defence. So how has this happened? Where's all this money? We're being told we have to give up things to get more money for defence, but what are they doing with the $60 billion?
Yeah, too many in the boss class, no real workers. David, thank you. That's a fair point, a fair observation you make. Thank you. I'll let you get on with your day. Malcolm in Wigan. Malcolm, are you similarly bullish about this, what they call deployment? Good morning.
No, I'm not. And the fact that, as I dub him, Toxic Tony, is now making an attempt at a rehabilitation would confirm that...
Tony Blair, you mean, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, Toxic Tony, as his nickname is. Right, there's others, the Blyer, you know, the one who lied about the Iraq War.
Right.
Right.
The fact that he is supportive of this is reason why I suspect, and apparently the majority of Brits do not support military intervention. I've heard opinion polls saying that
military intervention. I think it's military. It's defence, isn't it? I don't want boots on the ground, as they call it, and men and women marching in to Tehran. I'm totally against that. But I do feel we have a duty to support and to indeed to protect our citizens in the region and indeed our military.
And the way that we would do that is by not supporting Israel and America's aggression against Iran.
How will that stop? How will that stop Iranian drone strikes on the RAF base? Equatoria, how will that make any difference?
The key thing is that as soon as Britain...
Answer that question if you would, sir. How would that stop...
Let me answer your question. The key thing is that once Britain properly disengages and distances itself from both the genocidal regime of Netanyahu and Trump's terrible, disastrous decision for himself, I might add,
answering the question, Malcolm. Why would that stop Iranian drones being fired
on
the RAF base?
Then our people will become safer.
Why?
I'll make another point.
No, you'll answer that one.
Right,
why would that stop Iran firing drones on Cyprus?
Because at some point, I think the Iranians will...
I know what it is. Because we've kneeled down in front of a bully. And the minute they start hurling drones at our personnel, you keep your regime where you execute people on the streets, you imprison people, and you torture people, and we'll just look the other way because we're a bit frightened. You're going to throw a drone at us.
Makes you
proud to be
Israel,
British, doesn't it, Malcolm?
Genocide.
Never mind. We're talking about Cyprus. We're talking about Iran. We're talking about the United Kingdom, and we're talking about the United States. And your decision for the strongest ally that we've had for decades, on whom we rely by the way quite a lot for our national security, we're going to cut all ties and try and get closer to Tehran.
We should have an in-out
referendum. Feel proud of yourself, do you, Malcolm?
Membership.
Feel proud of yourself, do you? What a ridiculous assertion.
I think an in-out referendum on NATO membership.
There's a yellow streak running through Wigan today, Malcolm, and it's you. There's a yellow streak in the middle of Wigan.
I'm tough as nails.
You're tough as nails? Sorry, Iran, we're standing down. That's not tough as nails,
sir.
I wish nothing but safety to the military personnel, who are far braver than I in going into conflict, but they're doing it to look after British personnel there, British citizens there, and military personnel as well. And they have a duty, Malcolm, that I don't think you appreciate. 7:26, thank you for the call. Have a good day. To London, tube strike. Details, LBC's Henry Riley. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, tube strikes in London across 12 days, starting later this month. Now, this is all regarding a row over a four-day working week. Transport for London have called the action completely unnecessary. So the RMT union said that they've got concerns about shift lengths, unacceptable working time arrangements, and the potential impacts on fatigue and safety. They've accused Transport for London of refusing to negotiate. To put it in perspective, the RMT have around 1,800 driver members in London. That's around 40 to 50% of total tube drivers. They say that this has recently been rejected by their members in a referendum, and also claim that their members have been instructed not to use any company-issued electronic devices, including iPads, from the 21st of March until further notice. In a nutshell, Nick, the dispute comes down to the RMT want a 32-hour, four-day working week. They say that will help protect staff, ensure that their drivers can work for longer, healthier, and have some sort of social work-life balance as well. Transport for London say that they're offering a four-day working week, but with their same contracted hours. So rather than a 32 working week hours, they want a 35-hour working week, which is their current hours. The RMT say that this is a compressed working week and that they'll end up working more longer extreme shifts. Speaking on this issue before the dispute was announced, this was the General Secretary of the union, Eddie Dempsey.
Look, the job's becoming more difficult on London Underground. Our members work 364 days a year, 24/7 shifts. They're often staggered and all around the place. And we're delivering the tube system now with 2,000 less staff than we had.
Now, there will be six 24-hour weekday strikes, which start sort of confusingly at midday on those days. So it won't sort of, I mean, it'll be the 24th, for example, to the 27th of March that will be affected later this month, the 21st to the 24th of April, and the 19th to the 22nd of May. Now, this is the second time in the last 6 months that the union have announced action and will bring London to a standstill. They last did this in September. That was across a whole week. Transport for London say these are completely completely unnecessary. It will have a serious impact on London's businesses and commuters. A spokesperson said they are engaging with the unions on how to implement a new working pattern, but say the changes will improve reliability.
LBC's Henry Riley reporting, 7:29. Let's get more of your voices on about the deployment at last, some would say, of HMS Dragon. Michael's in Canterbury. What do you say to it, Michael? Are you in support of it or not? Good morning.
Oh, I'm a bit... good morning, Nick. How are you, mate? I listen to you most mornings.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much. Keeping me in work.
Oh, yeah, I am. It's hard getting on here most of the time, but, yeah, I'm happy I'm on here today.
Good. Your
total support. Total support of that. They should have been out a lot longer, though, really, to be honest. I think they knew about it way back in January. It's just they're sitting on their hands.
Yep.
Because this lot in charge, they don't know what they're doing, to be honest with you.
And to those who say we're being dragged into an illegal conflict by Donald Trump, how would you respond to that view?
We're not being dragged into any illegal conflict. The guy had nukes, you know. Can you imagine one of them lot having a nuke?
I think they were close. I think they were close to nuclear capability. I don't know if they've actually fully developed it. Yes, yes.
You know, so, no, what he's done is right. I mean, he's done absolutely what anyone with common sense would do.
How do you think it will end, Michael?
I've got no idea how it's going to end at the minute, but as long as it's someone prepared to negotiate and not have that weapon, then yeah, you do what you do. You don't want to interfere too much with the people themselves, like let them govern their own country, but they have to understand that, you know, you can't have a crazy guy in charge of something like that.
Some people would say, of course, undoubtedly, the Ayatollah is a crazy guy. Others would say you've got a crazy guy in Washington, but that's a different view. Michael, have yourself a safe day. Thanks for your input on that. Coming up after the news, horror in Switzerland. At least six killed in what would appear to be someone deliberately dousing themselves in fuel, petrol, and then setting it alight. Event on social media. We'll have a report after this. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News Time then. Dominic Ellis.
The government has approved a police request to ban a protest march in London this weekend. There were concerns around the annual Al-Quds Day march over its apparent backing for Iran's late supreme leader. The vital shipping route of the Strait of Hormuz has again become a flashpoint in the conflict in the Middle East. Two commercial ships have reportedly been damaged by unknown projectiles in the area. Overnight, the US said it destroyed 16 Iranian boats that were laying mines near the strait. And the government is set to publish the first set of files relating to the appointment of Lord Mandelson as UK ambassador to the US. He was sacked from the role last year over his ties to the late paedophile financier Jeffrey Epstein. He's always denied any wrongdoing. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some sunny spells will develop later, a high of 13 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
President Trump seems to have declared sort of nearly the end of all of this, and I think, boringly, the question might have to be, well, what was all of this? The regime hasn't changed insofar as the same people are perpetuating the same ideas. Iran's military has definitely been degraded. I don't think there is any doubt in that. They have alienated potential Gulf allies, or at least nations that were around them, because they've hit them with various missiles. So, what changed?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, plenty of reaction coming in on at last the deployment of HMS Dragon. Enter the Dragon, watch her roar. More in a moment. Christian Mayer is editor-in-chief at City AM, regularly stewards us through business matters, and the front page of his title, City AM, is talking about the oil crisis. What's the latest update on that? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, twists and turns and plenty of drama. Yesterday, the world's top oil producer, Saudi Aramco of Saudi Arabia, warned of catastrophic consequences for the global oil market if the conflict continues and indeed those critical Straits of Hormuz remain unpassable. It's the state-owned national oil company of Saudi Arabia. It controls about 270 billion barrels of oil reserves, and it has sounded the alarm. Its chief executive, Amin Nasser, said yesterday that there would be catastrophic consequences the longer disruption goes on. And the longer it goes on, the more drastic those consequences for the global economy. He described the current situation as by far the biggest crisis in the region's oil and gas history. Now, that tension comes as Saudi Arabia saw off a drone attack on oil production facilities overnight. And as your news headlines just told us, there has been a concerted effort by the United States to destroy shipping that could be laying mines in the Straits of Hormuz. All of this is coming closer to home. The Chancellor yesterday having to hear the news directly from the OBR that inflation is likely now to stay around 3% for the rest of this year. And indeed, there were some comments from the head of the one of the largest shipping companies in the world, Maersk, the Danish giant, yesterday, saying that, look, there's just no way around this. The increased costs that people are going to face, businesses are going to face to ship goods and around the world will be passed on to customers. And that, of course, is going to feed into that inflation headache. So there is still plenty of drama, plenty of volatility, I'm afraid, and therefore plenty of uncertainty.
Drama, volatility, uncertainty in the jobs market, and would seem more grim news. Christian.
Yeah, we're looking now at the automotive industry, Nick, and the electric vehicle side of that in particular, which is under huge pressure. Traditional manufacturers under huge pressure from Chinese imports. Volkswagen has said it's going to cut 50,000 jobs by the end of the decade, and they're scaling back their electric car ambitions. It seems the more China moves into European and Western EV sales, the more our traditional manufacturers say, actually, we rather like our petrol engines. A letter to shareholders, the chief executive of Volkswagen said that these cuts will fall mostly in Germany and across the entire group, which includes brands like Porsche and Audi. They'd already agreed 35,000 jobs with their union by 2030 as part of a package aimed at saving 16 billion euros. And this comes as car makers are dialing back those electric vehicle targets and goals, largely in the face of competition from very consumer-friendly, should we say, and cut-price Chinese rivals.
Move to other areas. Net zero. Where are you on that? Obviously, of course, with the interesting views coming out of the Middle East and the oil price conflict as well.
Yeah, well, the Climate Change Committee here in the UK yesterday put out a report, and you can really pick your preferred top line. There are some papers who are more enthusiastic about the race to net zero, have gone with the headline that the cost, the billions and billions of pounds of costs, is nothing compared to the potential impact of future oil price shocks. Other papers are a bit more sceptical of particularly this government's approach, although it should be noted that the net zero mandate was signed into law, waived into law by the last Tory government under Theresa May. But the figures, however you cut the story, are quite stark. Climate Change Committee have said that the annual net cost of switching to green and renewable energy will hit a peak of about £30 billion a year by 2029. The overall figure is likely to still be north of £100 billion to make that transition. Advocates, including those on the Climate Change Committee, say that there's simply no choice but to move to cleaner renewable resources, take us away from reliance on fossil fuels. Other people would point out that if we were still developing our own fossil fuels, that might be an interesting and sensible part of the energy mix.
Lastly, I know you're a man who knows his U-bend. Why should we all be looking at possibly plumbing as a trade or profession to follow, Christian?
Yeah, I've been known to get my toolkit out and whack a leaky tap to see if it stops leaking. It's rarely worked.
That's all I know as well. See if a damn good thug.
Yeah, but the chief executive of NVIDIA, the global AI giant, is beginning to push back a bit, as are many others in the AI industry, against the idea that AI is going to take away a load of jobs. Now, my personal view, Nick, is that it will. It will take away a huge amount, particularly white-collar professional jobs, in quite a short space of time. But that's a conversation for another day. But Jason Huang, who runs NVIDIA, has said, look, this is AI is going to be essential infrastructure, just like electricity and the internet. And he said that we are going to need an enormous amount of plumbers, electricians, pipe fitters, steel workers, technicians, installers to build out all the infrastructure. Now, that might be good news for people who are currently working in those professions. And of course, there will be good work available. But is he really saying that that's the kind of move that everybody should make? That if you're a trainee lawyer, you'll be better off actually figuring out how to fit pipes in data centres? It might not be the career plan that everybody had set their heart on, but it is a very lively debate. And the AI companies are now trying to push back against the narrative that this is going to lead to some sort of dystopian future where those at the very top hoard all the gains and benefits and the rest of us are out there in some sort of Hunger Games environment scrabbling around for what work we can find. So there's a cheery note to end things on, but I hope it sparks a bit of debate.
That room at City AM will always have your name on the door, Christian. I have no doubt about that. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, around the same time tomorrow, 7:40, coming to you. Tony, you'll be the next caller. Just feature some of social media texts that are coming in. Murph says the military headquarters are being filled with civil servants with no military experience. They don't understand how the military works and what is required. With them leading, we will never be able to be adequately prepared. Pete says, no one wants to go to war. Everyone can hear how frustrating this is for you. You're a joke. Why aren't you reporting on the lies Trump has used? I don't want to go to war. I've said, but you have to defend your citizens who are not in the United Kingdom and your military. Same point here, James from Greenford. Stop beating the drums of war. It's clear Iran did not send that drone. No, one of its proxies did. Our country does not need to be involved in the mess, nor can it afford it. If it's defence you want, then the more we distance ourselves from the illegal war, the safer we are. You should take some lessons from Spain, says James in Greenford. Would that be the country Spain that has sent the, and I'm not very good at pronunciation, Cristobal Colon, its frigate to Cyprus to accompany the French aircraft carrier Charles de Gaulle in defence of the region? Would that be the same Spain, James? Think it probably would. John says you need to listen to callers like Malcolm. He's got it absolutely right. You've got it absolutely wrong. I did listen to Malcolm and I challenged him and that's what it's about. But I respect Malcolm's position. I happen to think it's wrong and I'm damn certain he happens to think I'm wrong. But hey, that's what makes for debate. Should we go to Cyprus? Tony is in Limassol. Tony, good to have you on. What's the picture from there? Good morning. Dragon's on its way.
Yeah, the dragon's finally on its way. A little bit of a laughing stock.
If you can just hold the line for another 2 weeks, we'll be with you.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, they've been saying that over a week they were going to deploy it. Mm. And the fact that the Spanish are here who were really coated off initially by Trump, and they're actually here now defending the island that was attacked, with their English base was attacked, and they've done nothing about it. Yet everyone else is stepping in to defend the island and obviously the English bases. And all over here, it genuinely is a little bit of a laughing stock.
Well, let me ask you, the French are there in considerable numbers. The Germans and the Spanish are getting there already. And of course, the Greeks, which are much closer. But when people talk about Britain or the Royal Navy, or indeed Sir Keir Starmer, what do they say, Tony?
They just laugh. It's on the news again. Oh, they're going to launch it. They're probably still fueling it up. Or maybe they're waiting for the oil price to come down so they can fuel it up to make it over here. This is how life is pretty much normal over here. You wouldn't believe that, obviously, that all this is going on. But
And lastly, let me ask you, more broadly, the Trump intervention two or so weeks ago, the whole Iran conflict, the bombing of the Ayatollah, what level of support or otherwise in Cyprus for that, Tony?
I didn't really understand. What do you mean?
Are local people in support of what Donald Trump is doing in Iran?
Generally. Everyone's on board with it.
They are.
Because of how close we are to, you know, the island is, you know, and strategically placed.
Yes.
Everyone does see it as a threat.
Tony, thanks for calling in from Cyprus. You look after yourself. Ring us again when you've time, perhaps to talk to you next week. When Dragon gets down there, you can get out the bunting and celebrate Enter the Dragon. Tony, thank you. 7:43. Back here in the UK, it's an anniversary. It's a year since bin workers in Birmingham staged all-out strike, with no current negotiations taking place and seeming no end in sight. It started as a series of one-day strikes, has turned into one of the longest-running industrial disputes of modern times. Here with all the details, LBC's Luke Shanahan. Luke, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I first spoke to you about these bin strikes for the first time a year and a week ago today, I think it was. That was obviously after those intermittent strikes over proposed pay cuts, but we'd already seen huge disruption in the city. And then on the 11th of March 2025, workers voted to make that strike all out and continuous, and we've not stopped talking about it here in the city since. How about a year in numbers to start off, Nick? You know, after we've done... both done this for a full year, numbers mean visual comparisons.
I'm looking forward to this. We've had double-decker buses, the Titanic. Come on, what have we got this time, Luke?
So, an estimated 80,000 tonnes of recycling has been incinerated in the last year. That's like burning an Eiffel Tower, plus change, that change being 30 fully loaded Boeing 747s.
I worry about
you want another, Nick?
I worry about this lad's emotional well-being. Yeah, come on, Luke, let's have another one.
At times last year, agency crews were collecting 1,700 tonnes of rubbish every single day. So, daily, that's about 10 blue whales worth of waste.
Well done. Isn't it now? What happens next, Luke?
Well, this is the problem. The city council says the situation's under control, but the mound of fly-tipping black bags and rotting food I'm staring at just now is anything but under control. Same goes for the rats. I can hear scurrying underneath all of that. These are all common sights, smells, sounds in parts of the city, not just in Bawdsley Green, where I spoke to Hikmet.
People come, they just think this is a tip. You know, people just come here every day. You clear this today, after 8 or 9, it'll be filled up again. Since this strike began, obviously, it's full of rats.
And Hikmet is not alone in his frustration.
You see things dumped, you see rats, you see it's disgusting. I mean, it's surely this should not have happened, you know, for as long as it has been, so...
It's polluting a lot of places, loads of rubbish everywhere. There's rats, because I've seen them.
It's annoying, because it makes the streets look disgusting, do you know what I mean? You don't want to live there.
Give them what they're rightfully asking for.
So why is the city still being put through all this? Well, we're still at a complete deadlock. Anne Kassab's leading negotiations for the Bin Workers Union unite.
We don't have to be sitting here in a year's time having this conversation. This can be resolved this evening. It can be resolved tomorrow. There is a resolution. Look, none of us want this. It's horrible for the residents. It's horrible for our members. But I think everybody can see now that the only reason for the delay here is the council failing to get into the room.
But City Council leader John Cotton doesn't see it like that.
So we continue to be in a position where our door is open to further negotiations. I've always said I want a negotiated settlement to this dispute, which has gone on for far too long. However, what I can't do is give in to demands that would reopen an equal pay liability that literally nearly sank this council.
Whether or not this can last another 6 months to beat the 20-month record set by the Silent Night Strike of the 1980s to be one of Britain's longest-running ever all-out strikes, that's a question no one wants answering. But the truth is, Nick, a resolution feels no closer than it did a year ago.
Luke Shanahan reporting, complete with blue whales and just about everything else to colour his report. Luke, thank you for that. Coming up after the news, the government still thinks those ID cards are ideal.
It must be for everyone. We will not leave people behind, and if you struggle with technology or traditional forms of identity documents, we will be there to help you reward the benefit of these services too.
Chief Secretary of the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, he'll join us after the 7:45 LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, has granted a police request to ban an apparently pro-Iranian regime march in London. The US military says it's destroyed 16 Iranian mine-laying ships near the Strait of Hormuz. And it's understood the first documents related to Lord Mandelson's appointment as UK ambassador to the US will be released later. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some bright spells later, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, London Northwestern services aren't running between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey. It's because of overhead wire problems. And Chiltern Railways are delayed by about 20 minutes to and from Marylebone after a signal failure. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line and minor delays on the Bakerloo lines. On the roads, it's very busy on the M1 southbound to Junction 11 at Dunstable South. This is following an accident. And also queues on the M40 northbound to the M25 junction after a car broke down earlier. There are two problems on the A13. Both are westbound. Firstly, the road is closed from the Pitsey flyover to the Five Bells interchange after an accident. And then there are long queues westbound to the M25 because a car's broken down.
LBC.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job. Your first love. Your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our First Drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search First Drive weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear all change, please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message.
Mm.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8 minutes before eight, we'll come back to events in the Gulf, the Middle East in a moment, but events back here at home and the possibility of these digital IDs that want to be introduced by the government that initially seemed in favour of it then. Can I suggest there might have been a minor U-turn, but it's back on track now and a sort of people's panel to be established. You might have heard some of that coming from Darren Jones, who's Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, one of the big advocates of the ID scheme, and he joins me now. A little more detail, if you would, on this people's panel. Why will it be set up? How will it work? Good morning to you, Chief Secretary.
Good morning, Nick. So this digital ID, the ability to log into the gov.uk app and prove who you are so that you can actually access customer services from the government instead of being on the phone for hours at 8 o'clock in the morning, is, I think, an important programme, but it's obviously sparked quite a lot of interest across the country. And that's why I've said that I want to consult with the public in a new and different way. So there's the online consultation that everybody can take part in now by searching digital ID consultation. But then for a further 4 weeks, we're going to take a representative sample of the public at large. They're going to come together for 3 evenings and 2 weekends at a hotel in Birmingham. And we're going to work through all of the questions together about how we build it, how we use it, about what age it should be available from, what the best use cases are. And at the end of that 4 weeks, they get to vote on their recommendations to the government, and that becomes a formal part of the consultation.
All happening in Birmingham?
In Birmingham, yeah.
But those critics suggest that their rubbish has been there untouched for 12 months. Quite a good place to go to, Chief Secretary.
Well, look, it's a kind of a place, a good place in the country for when people from around the country are trying to travel somewhere central.
How will those lucky individuals who will spend 3 evenings or 2 weekends, how will they get selected?
So a company is doing that process. It's called Sortition for us. The idea is that the 100 or so people accurately reflect the breadth of age and backgrounds and locations and views on digital ID, from people who hate it to people who love it, and in the middle. And that will happen. You get a bit like the Willy Wonka gold ticket arriving through your letterbox saying, would you like to take part? And those lucky few that want to will then come together and help us form this policy.
Maybe lucky in your eyes, but what happens if they vote against it, Chief Secretary?
Well, it'll be part of the consultation. So in the same way that if they come up in the end and say, this whole thing sounds horrifying, I don't want it, then it's something the government will reflect on as part of the consultation.
What does reflect on mean? You'll scrap it, surely. If the panel is... do we call it a people's panel? If the people's panel is a guinea, surely the government will listen and it will be scrapped.
Well, the big test here is that we want to build something the public want to use, because we think this is a better way of them accessing public services like they do online banking or online shopping. I actually don't think in the end this is going to be very contentious, and I am deeply confident, and I'll come back and tell you how we're getting on with it, but I'm deeply confident that by the end of the people's panel, people will say, if I can get this in private companies, why can't I get it for my government public services?
But to my point, if the people's panel finds against it, can you give my listeners an assurance now that it would be scrapped if the panel goes against you and your colleagues?
Well, it can definitely range
from
changes.
You can't say that, can you?
Well, it's a consultation.
What's the point of having a panel, Chief Secretary? You've already decided the outcome.
No, that's not true. That's not
true. So you will scrap it. If the panel finds against it, you will scrap it.
If we have unanimous feedback in the consultation that says everybody thinks it's a disaster, then we're probably not going to go ahead with it, because we need people to want to use it.
But what about a majority? 52 place 48, numbers you might remember. How would that be?
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll come back and talk to you about the consultation when we've gone through it. But as I say, I'm pretty positive that the public will say, you know, taxpayers are paying for public services that today are not good enough. And I think they'll rightly say, of course you should get on and make these better.
You initially said, I'm so sorry, you said just now that it's so that my listeners, the public, can access government services. Wasn't this first the idea, when it was brought in, to make sure to crack down on what's known as the jobs black market, with apologies to anyone who's offended? That was the first idea of it, wasn't it? So why has it changed?
Well, this is still part of it. So one of the things that will change is that from 2029, you have to digitally verify your right to work in the UK.
But it's not mandatory, is it?
Well, it is already a legal requirement when you start a new job for your boss to check that you've got the right to work in the UK. That's been in place for a long time.
Will it be mandatory to have a digital ID to seek employment?
No, but you can use it if you want to.
So what the hell is the point? Right, you can use it if you want to, but you don't have to.
Let me tell you, Nick. So the problem today is it's a legal requirement when you start a new job, you've got to prove your right to work. Yep. Most employers will scan or photocopy your passport or driving license and put it in the filing cabinet, and no one knows whether they've done the check or not. That's the problem. When it's digitally verified, either using the government digital ID or another digital tool which you can use from 2029, the enforcement officers that are trying to look for forced labour and modern slavery and illegal work will be able to see that the majority of businesses have already done the checks properly, because they can digitally verify that online, and then they can send the troops into the areas where they need to go and check properly.
But I say again, it won't be mandatory.
What is mandatory is that employers will have to digitally verify their employees' right to work in the UK so that you can target your labour market enforcement officers more effectively.
But it's reported that the Health Ministry has its own NHS app, and there's a digital passport. The Education Ministry is also looking at plans for a digital passport, and it is reported that both relevant Secretaries of State are said to be concerned with the digital ID plans. You haven't even got the support of all your colleagues.
So this has collective agreement from Cabinet. The reporting on the Department for Education is wrong, so I don't know where that's come from.
It's the Times and the Daily Express, but go on.
It's wrong, and I can tell you it's wrong.
What about the NHS app?
So on the NHS app, we decided from the very beginning that it was going to be separate, and the NHS app is the only exception, because The public will know we've already spent a load of money on the NHS app since COVID. It works quite well. It's probably the best app that government has, and people understandably want their health data to be separate.
I presumably I'll still require a driver's licence if I'm driving a car, and I'll still require a passport.
Mm-hmm.
So I need a passport, a driver's licence, an NHS app, presumably still my social security number, and digital ID. For the love of God, where does this end?
Well, all of those things, apart from your NHS app, will come together in the gov.uk
app. My passport will?
Eventually, yes. I mean, you won't be able to use it to travel, because other countries need to be able to interact with it.
My driver's licence? I won't need my physical driver's licence?
No. No, it'll be on the app.
So that will be on. And when do we foresee, when do we hope that might happen?
Towards the end of the Parliament. So kind of 2028, 2029.
Towards the end of the Parliament, we'll be phasing out driver's licences and it will go onto this digital ID.
You'll be able to use your driving licence validly from the app. Yeah.
Can you explain, the polling was strongly in favour of this idea of digital ID until October, when Sir Keir Starmer announced it as government policy. What does that say about the popularity of this government?
Well, look, as I say, the digital ID announcement sparked a lot of interest across the country. I totally recognise that, and I welcome
the opportunity. Well, everybody liked it until Sir Keir said it was policy.
I welcome the opportunity to talk to the public about it, and that's why we're doing this consultation, why we're doing the People's Panel, which I recognise is doing democracy a bit differently to the way we do it at the moment. But I think that's important, given the public, unfortunately, have low levels of trust in politicians. I think it's right we try and do these things differently. And ultimately, as I say, I'm very confident that this will build the foundations for modern public services that are there for people when they need them the most, which also, by the way, will be cheaper to run than the current system, which costs way too much and has poor outcomes.
All right, last minute or so together. A couple of other things we need to explore. Can you confirm the first wave of the Mandelson files will be published today? How many will there be? How much? How many still to come? And will we know more on the vetting process? Chief Secretary.
So the first tranche of the documents will be published this afternoon. I'll be giving a statement to the House of Commons when that happens. There'll be a second tranche of documents that will come a few weeks later, because when Parliament requested to see the documents, and government obviously agreed to do this because we have a shared interest in transparency around what Peter Mandelson did and his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, we went around government to kind of ask for any other emails and WhatsApps and things that hadn't come forward. And those documents have to go through the Metropolitan Police because there's a criminal investigation taking place at the moment, as well as the Intelligence and Security Committee in Parliament before they can be published. So there'll be a bit of a gap between the first bunch and the second bunch.
All right. With the pressure on oil prices, can you confirm the proposed 5p hike in fuel duty in September will be delayed?
So you'll know that in law you have a baked-in increase in fuel prices every year, and every year for however many years, chancellors at the budget have decided to keep it frozen. The chancellor did that in the last budget through to September. There'll be another budget in the autumn, and the chancellor will tell us what she decides.
But the 5p hike is due in September, isn't it?
Yes, but the budget's also due in the autumn. So,
prior to the September hike?
Well, the Chancellor hasn't confirmed the date of the budget, but it'll be around that time.
So will the budget be before or after the proposed hike in 5p fuel?
So I can't tell you the specific.
Well, it's going to be afterwards,
yet.
Chief Secretary, isn't it?
Well, we have not decided on the date yet, so I can't say yes.
When was their last budget in August?
Well, it won't be in August because Parliament's not sitting.
So the first week of September. How would you stop it coming in? I'm confused.
Well, my point is that the Chancellor will want to consider this issue.
But the point is it's going to come in, isn't it? It won't be stopped.
Well, I can't say.
Well,
if
it's due in September.
Yeah.
You agree you're not going to hold a budget in August. So, and unless you did it September the 1st or something, it's going to come in.
As I say, the Chancellor will have to announce it as part of a budget, which will happen around that time, but I don't have the authority today to tell you the precise date of the budget. That's for the Chancellor to confirm.
How relaxed are you that the protest, the so-called Al-Quds Day demonstration, has been banned? I thought we had the right to protest in this country.
We do, so long as it can be done safely and peacefully. And, of course, is in line with the law around not inciting violence or hatred and those types of things.
How did we know this was going to break? How were we so able to look ahead at what might have happened this weekend? What were the grounds?
So the Metropolitan Police undertake that assessment. It's them that's requested the Home Secretary to use the powers to ban the proposed of the moving march that was going to happen this weekend. And they will account for that, but it will have been considering things like the ability to police it, the consequences maybe for additional marches, the overall capacity of the system to keep people safe.
Always grateful for your time. Thank you. Chief Secretary of the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, explaining this People's panel will now adjudicate on the idea of a digital ID. You can adjudicate in a little bit later in the show. 2 minutes after 8, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the government has approved a police request to ban a protest march in London this weekend. There were concerns about the annual Al-Quds Day march over its apparent backing for Iran's late supreme leader. Organisers insist it's always been peaceful. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more details.
The Met said last night that the links of the Al-Quds Day march to the Iranian regime and the increased tensions across the Middle East just now mean that there was too high a risk of serious disorder, with protesters, police officers and members of the public, they say, likely to get hurt this weekend as they prepared to come face to face with counter demonstrations.
The United States claims it's destroyed 16 of Iran's mine-laying ships near the Strait of Hormuz. There's also reports this morning of 2 cargo vessels being hit by unknown projectiles in the vital shipping route. The warship HMS Dragon is also on its way to the eastern Mediterranean to protect British interests there. Files related to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington are expected to be released later. It follows concerns from MPs about how he was vetted and what was known about his links to the late paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Lord Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing in relation to his friendship with Epstein. Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, has just spoken to Nick and outlined the timeline for the release.
The first tranche of the documents will be published this afternoon. I'll be giving a statement to the House of Commons when that happens. There'll be a second tranche of documents that will come a few weeks later, because when Parliament requested to see the documents, and the government obviously agreed to do this because we have a shared interest in transparency around what Peter Mandelson did and his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
Reforms of the court system in England and Wales have passed their first hurdle in the Commons. They included controversial proposals to limit jury trials in some cases to address rising backlogs. And Tottenham's Champions League campaign looks almost over. They lost 5-2 in the first leg of their last 16 tie away to Atletico Madrid last night. In the city, the FTSE 100's just reopened at 10,412. It closed up 162 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most, some bright spells developing later, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mum!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest-growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claim.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 6 minutes after 8 on Wednesday, March the 11th. Do you back the idea of ID, digital ID, a people's panel put together? If you're just joining us, your alarm sounded 6 minutes ago. We'll play you some of the conversations I had with a relevant government minister as they continue to go ahead and they put this people's panel, they assemble a people's panel. More on that. In other news, as we look at the Middle East conflict, Israel's leader of the opposition, Yair Lapid, speaking with reporters earlier this week about the need to support Israel against the Iranian regime.
We are standing united against the Iranian regime, against this existential threat. We have to fight this regime until it's gone.
Back in the UK, but in a related story, the Al-Quds demonstration planned for the weekend has been banned. As suggested in a conversation yesterday, the ban has come in overnight, by the way, but I was speaking about this with the Minister for Courts and Legal Services, Sarah Sattman KC, who told me...
Those expressing support for the malign regime in Iran and the IRGC and its proxies have no place in our society. They shouldn't be on the streets of London.
Plus, the idea... figures, who are indeed global figures, British global figures such as Sir Winston Churchill and Jane Austen will be replaced from our banknotes by animals such as badgers and otters. Where's the sense and sensibility in that?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Digital plans are to go ahead despite the government admitting it doesn't fully know how much it will cost. Also knowing that in some areas there's considerable opposition to it. Now, in the last 10 minutes of the show, I spoke with the Chief Secretary of the Treasury, to the Prime Minister, Chief Secretary of the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, because of this idea of the People's Panel that we are be assembled. So how exactly will it work? And if the panel votes against it, would they be scrapped?
Well, it can definitely range
from
changes.
You can't say that, can you?
Well, it's a consultation.
What is the point of having a panel, Chief Secretary? You've already decided the outcome.
No, that's not true. That's not
true. So you will scrap it. If the panel finds against it, you will scrap it.
If we have unanimous feedback in the consultation that says everybody thinks it's a disaster, then we're probably not going to go ahead with it because we need people to want to use it.
But what about a majority? 52 place 48, numbers you might remember. How would that be?
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll come back and talk to you about the consultation when we've gone through it. But as I say, I'm pretty positive that the public will say, you know, taxpayers are paying for public services that today are not good enough. And I think they'll rightly say, of course you should get on and make these better.
You initially said, I'm so sorry, you said just now that it's so that my listeners, the public, can access government services. Wasn't this first the idea, when it was brought in, to make sure to crack down on what's known as the jobs black market, with apologies to anyone who's offended? That was the first idea of it, wasn't it? So why has it changed?
Well, this is still part of it. So one of the things that will change is that from 2029, you have to digitally verify your right to work in the UK.
But it's not mandatory, is it?
Well, it is already a legal requirement when you start a new job for your boss to check that you've got the right to work in the UK. That's been in place for a long time.
Will it be mandatory to have a digital ID to seek employment?
No. But you can use it if you want to.
So what the hell is the point? You can use it if you want to, but you don't have to.
Let me tell you, Nick. So the problem today is it's a legal requirement when you start a new job, you've got to prove your right to work. Yep. Most employers will scan or photocopy your passport or driving license and put it in the filing cabinet, and no one knows whether they've done the check or not. That's the problem. When it's digitally verified, either using the government digital ID or another digital tool which you can use from 2029, the enforcement officers that are trying to look for forced labour and modern slavery and illegal work will be able to see that the majority of businesses have already done the checks properly because they can digitally verify that online, and then they can send the troops into the areas where they need to go and check properly.
But I say again, it won't be mandatory.
What is mandatory is that employers will have to digitally verify their employees' right to work in the UK so that you can target your labour market enforcement officers more effectively.
And round it goes. Well, they're looking for a people's panel. They should just tune in to LBC because we'll take your calls in just a moment. Let's get one expert, though, to prompt our conversation. Dr. Melanie Green, Associate Professor of International Security at University College London, former cyber policy lead at the Tony Blair Institute. And I note that Sir Tony Blair has indicated support broadly for the idea of digital ID. Are you on the same page, Professor? And if so, why? Good morning.
Good morning. I think, yes, under the correct circumstances.
Caveat, I hear, Professor.
That is a problem sometimes with how we're seeing the rollout. But yes, fundamentally, I think there's two things that we miss. We've missed that already there's about a sixth of the UK uses online services, digital services, across a number of agencies, from tax, from GBLA. We're a lot more, we share a lot more information than we believe. And there's whole countries that have moved into the digital ID system, and it is proven to make, you know, living and working and accessing services a lot more efficient.
You say that, and by the way, I need to get your ID right. I do apologise. I'm told I called you Melanie Green instead of Melanie Garson, so my apologies, Dr. Garson. It is Dr. Melanie Garson. Coming back to what you say, within the government, it doesn't even appear to have full support of the Department of Health. They're going to continue with their NHS app as well, so you'd need your NHS app as well as your digital ID. Surely that's not the state of affairs that is ideal.
It depends on how these end up being joined up. So they do have, and there are different models for how this works, with different elements of data being decentralized rather than centralized. And there's advantages and disadvantages to that. One of them can both be data security, so you don't have everything all in one repository. You can also choose what becomes shared between each. The best models of digital identity that we're seeing rolled out is ones where people still feel they have control over their data. It's less that is your record digitized. It's is your record shared across different places without your consent. And if your records are digitized, but so if you take countries like Estonia that have had over 20 years of digital ID, they tend to be the gold standard. They also have an access log. So if somewhere in the government or someone to access your digital ID, you have the right to review it, go back and ask why. And so I think it's less, you know, and those are the things the government isn't making clear right now, is what does this picture look like? How much right do you have over the control? How much can you share with, do you choose exactly who gets to see what? And we call it meronymity. It's where you have a control over how much of that data is shared within your different digital ID sort of pictures.
Dr. Garson, thank you for your time. Melanie Garson, your Associate Professor for International Security at University College London. You served as cyber policy lead at the Tony Blair Institute until very recently, indeed, until last year, 8/13. That's the background, that's the support, but what are you saying about it? Trevor in Thatcham. Trevor, your reaction. You're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I don't like it. I don't like any of these silly ideas that they're doing.
I don't know why, but I don't either. Tell me why you don't like
it,
sir.
Well, we got a business. In business, you've got a bit of a saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Oh. And I personally think that if you've got HMRC, they've got information there. If it gets hacked, that's just the information that goes. Mm. If you're going to get everything in one place, they're going to get your bank details, your passport. Not that that worries me because I don't go abroad much at all. You've got health, NHS stuff on there. You're going to have everything on there about you.
Yep.
And I do not agree with things like it. We've got too much hacking going on with computers. And it's just a stupid idea. It's another one of Labour's daft ideas, as far as I'm concerned.
And yet, you look in a country such as the professor there said, Melanie Garson, you look at Estonia, and it is a gold standard. And apparently, again, Estonia is considerably a smaller country than the United Kingdom. It allows people to access services, and it runs very smoothly. Trevor?
No, I don't agree with it. I being self-employed, as far as I'm concerned, it's not going to affect me job-wise because I work for myself. So that side of it's not going to make any difference. There's just no incentive, I don't think. And if it's going to be not mandatory, which they said the other day,
I thought this
was going to be got rid of anyway. I thought they got rid of it. They said they weren't going to do it.
They did. That was when the Prime Minister initially supported it. That's when the public turned against it, and now they're turning around again. So many U-turns, it gets you quite dizzy. Trevor says no. Thank you, sir. See what others make of it. And coming up later in the hour, why Winston Churchill will be swapped for an otter. Yes, you did hear that correctly. Where's the sense and sensibility of taking Jane Austen off a banknote? 8:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The United States says it's destroyed 16 of Iran's mine-laying ships near the vital shipping route of the Strait of Hormuz. The government's approved a police request to ban a protest march in London this Sunday. And the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has confirmed to Nick the first documents relating to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington will be released later. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Widespread sunny spells developing later. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the M1 southbound to Junction 11 at Dunstable South. It was after an accident that happened earlier. Also delays on the M3 northbound to the M25 junction, also after an accident. Now, these two big problems on the A13 do continue. Westbound, it's closed from the Pitsey flyover to the Five Bells interchange. That's after an accident. And then there are delays westbound from Grays to the M25 because a car's broken down. In Staines, there's been an accident on Staines Bridge, the A308. That's causing queues both ways. And the North Circular Road's very busy southbound to the Ilford flyover. On the trains, London North Western remains suspended between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey.
LBC.
Pump 4, please. The one with the new tyres. I got them on eBay for such a good price. And the windscreen wipers. I fitted those myself. They click right into place. It was incredibly satisfying.
Anything else?
Oil, headlights. Oh, and furry dice, you know, for the lols.
Aside from the petrol.
Oh, sorry. Thought you were asking what else I got on eBay.
No, I think we got that covered.
When you find great deals on car parts, you can't help but say when it's eBay, things people love. Eligible parts, T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8 now, we'll return to a very important domestic conversation about the idea of digital ID, but let's stay with global affairs and go back to the conflict in the Middle East. And we have the opportunity and privilege indeed to bring in the conversation Yair Lapid, who's leader of the opposition in Israel, and indeed has served as interim prime minister a few years back and joins me now. Thank you very much for coming on. Mr. Lapid, to those who say that the actions that your country, Israel, and United States are engaged in Iran are illegal, how would you respond? Good morning.
Good morning. Can I start with something else?
Of course.
I saw you during the commercial laughing at something. I don't know what. But I saw you laughing hard. And I thought to myself, as weird as it might sound, this is, you're the first person I saw really laughing for about 2 weeks.
Oh, my goodness. So,
yes. It comes to show what is happening here, really. It was just weird. I saw you and I said to myself, yeah, I haven't seen anybody laughing.
If you need me to lift the spirit of the nation, Mr. Lapid, I am available. If you want to bring me in on an El Al flight.
Well, sir, if I need you to lift the spirit of the nation, we are in a bigger trouble than I thought.
Well, this has started well, sir.
Yes,
it was something, a domestic issue here that we're dealing with among my team. So to more global matters, yes, what of the idea of illegality, Mr. Lapid?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure international law was invented in order to protect terrorists and rogue governments or regimes or people who kill their own countrymen in tens of thousands. I think the idea of international law was to protect us from these people, not to use it to protect these people. So we are fighting a war against a terror regime that bound and swore to, build the nuclear weapons in order to use it against Israel and to be able to shower our cities in ballistic missiles. So, yes, I think it is in accordance to what international law is and what it was established for.
How would you characterize the positions taken by President Trump to this date?
Well, I would say, President Trump has this interesting tendency to speak his mind freely. But actually, the goals were pretty clear. The goals were obliterating the nuclear program, obliterating the ballistic missile program, and maybe creating the conditions that will enable the people of Iran, who felt a little helpless last January when they took to the streets and did not get any help. So maybe it will create different conditions for them to take their destiny in their own hands. Now, I'm a very small believer in the possibility of changing a regime with airstrikes. But I do believe that if they will decide to change the destiny of their nation, Iran is unlike its regime, is a glorious ancient culture, then now they're much better positioned to do so.
The president said 2 days ago, Mr. Lapid, that the conflict will end, quotes, very soon and is, quotes, very complete. Do you concur?
Well, I think it is not about the timetable, but achievements. I think, as I was saying, the goals were pretty clear and we have to do our best to achieve as much as we can. So yes, everybody. I think everybody's concerned, or at least taking into consideration the two objects, which is the Chinese conference in the end of the month and the oil prices. And it's okay. I mean, in geopolitics, you're taking into account many elements. But basically, the important thing is to try to achieve as much as possible from the goals of the war as described in day one.
If we turn to the United Kingdom, how supportive do you think the UK has been to this? How supportive should the UK be to this?
Well, I think, you know more about this than I do, but I think the fact that the British public was carrying into this one the national trauma you have with the involvement in the Iraqi war and the kind of... And you know what? It's not only the British public, but it's also the Labour Party. I think this made the position you took a bit biased. I think it's a just war. It is so rare in the 21st century to have a war with moral clarity. It's a just war against a terrible regime. I think you had in the past, you might even have now, British citizens who are in Iranian prisons for doing nothing. And I think Britain could be more involved in this. You have the bases in Cyprus and elsewhere. You have the ability to be part of at least the air defense. And I think that I hope that the government is now considering getting more involved. I was, of course, looking at the kind of almost humoristic dispute between the prime minister and the president. But in terms of what needs to be done, I think you can take more tangible steps.
Well, do you believe Sir Keir Starmer to be a friend of Israel?
Yes, certainly.
How does he demonstrate that?
I do believe that criticism is not a sign of being unsympathetic. And I keep telling the government, I find myself in the weird position that as leader of the opposition, I'm supporting the government on this one. So I'm thanking you for letting me, reminding the fact that I'm in disagreement with them on most things. One of them is the fact that every time somebody criticizes Israel, there's yelling and shouting, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism. There's a difference. I think Keir Starmer was the key figure in getting rid of anti-Semitism within the Jeremy Corbyn-like anti-Semitism in Labour Party. I think he's a friend of Israel. I think we disagree on a few things. I think we just need to be able to have a continuous conversation about the things we disagree upon and about the things we want to do together, and I think we do.
Why do we need epic fury? Midnight Hammer, Operation Midnight Hammer, we were told, was successful. Was it a failure, in truth?
Well, it didn't achieve enough, obviously, but and besides, of course, the Iranian cake went straight back to the evil ways. So what happened was the agreement in the end of the operation. Again, I'm not going to defend things that Benjamin Netanyahu said. I never said it's over. I always thought that the threat is still there. But basically, there was an agreement that they ended the war in January, or the operation in January. And of course, the Iranians disobeyed what they've signed themselves, because this is what they do. It's a regime of deceive and lying. And they've been doing it for more than a decade now. I mean, negotiating, and while negotiating, keep on building the nuclear program and the ballistic missile program. This is what they do. They're not to be believed, because it's not even a regime. It's a terror organization who took a hostage entire country.
But many would say, lastly, that they were engaged in negotiations at a time when the United States and Israel carried out those attacks 2 weeks ago.
Well, the many who said that took that information from the Iranians themselves. We know more. It was interesting.
What can you share? When you say you know more, what can you share? Well,
I can share the fact that they were not really negotiating. They were buying time. They were stalling. They said to themselves, as much time as we can get, we're going to use it building more ballistic missiles, more launchers, more nuclear facilities. It was interesting to me, Stephen Witkoff, who was running the negotiations in Oman, said that the Iranians bragged about the fact that while negotiating, they already have enough enriched uranium for 11 atomic bombs. Since at least five of those 11 are aimed at my house in Tel Aviv, I think I'm entitled to be unhappy.
Grateful for your time today, Yair Lapid, your leader of the opposition in Israel. And I wish you happier times to return to you and everyone involved on every side of the conflict across the whole of the Middle East. And you can start smiling again. Thank you for your input on that. 8:28, we come back to domestic affairs. Richard in Woodford Green. Richard, you want to talk about the People's Panel? You have concerns. Yeah, what are they?
I do. Well, first thing, Nick, always a pleasure speaking to
Thank you.
And
have to compliment
you in your stoicism, because how you manage to speak to ministers on a daily basis with the continual drivel that comes out of their mouth
is just
beyond me. But I guess it's a job. But no, I mean, the minister himself said with the People's Panel that they're using outside people to pick 100 people with a cross-selection of people. Now, if you're picking people with a cross-selection, that means you're going to be picking people for it and against it. So presumably, if you do your job correctly, you're going to end up with something like a 50-50 balance. So if you end up with a 50-50 balance, what is the point? What is the point? They're surely just going to go ahead and do what they like anyway. And the minister's actually come out and said that he wants near enough a unanimous, you know, decision against it.
Do you honestly think...
How do you get that?
Well, I think there are two things. I think they think they'll win everybody over. And even if they don't, they will just say, well, it's an advisory decision, advisory panel ruling, and they'll just ignore it. Isn't that what you took from his words?
Absolutely, 100%. That's what I'm saying. I don't know how you keep your cool, to be honest with you.
Well, it's very kind of you. If you were part of that panel, what question would you ask? I don't know. I sense that there is a degree of concern. What would you want to find out? What would you want to discover?
Is it going to make any difference to our daily lives, or is this just another project that we're going to throw billions of pounds on that makes absolutely no difference because we've already got passports in place, driving licenses in place and everything? If it's not going to be mandatory, if they're not going to use it as something definitive to, effectively find out people who should be in this country, shouldn't be in this country, should be working, shouldn't be working, then what's the point?
Richard, thank you. Thanks for your kind words about the show. We'll stay with that conversation. Also, coming up later in the show, forget university, young adults, get rich, be a plumber, go into a trade rather than necessarily a profession where you spend years at university. We'll explore that, and indeed who's saying that, later in the show. It's 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
The Strait of Hormuz has again become a flashpoint in the conflict in the Middle East. A number of cargo ships have reportedly been damaged by unknown projectiles in the area. The US says it's destroyed 16 Iranian mine-laying ships near the vital trade route. The government's approved a police request to ban a protest march in London this weekend. There were concerns about the annual Al-Quds Day march over its apparent backing for Iran's late supreme leader. And files related to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington are set to be released later. So Keir Starmer's top aide, Darren Jones, has told Nick this morning he will make a statement in the Commons this afternoon. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some sunny spells developing later, a high of 13 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
Donald Trump gave a news conference that was rambling, at times incoherent, sometimes contradictory about what is going on in Iran. But one message did come through clearly. He's had enough of this war. Is it because of oil prices in the US now that is forcing him to change course?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell. Feel good investing.
the value of your investments can go up or down.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
You want your car in good hands. With expertise, Halfords will keep it moving this spring with ease. You want your annual service ticked off. That's great. And in store, we'll fit batteries while you wait. You're never far from a garage or store for fitting, fixing, checks and more. You want mobile experts to fit tyres on your drive while you relax and take five to keep moving forwards with none of the fuss. You want Halfords, the name you can trust. Full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to you on the conversation about a digital ID card, a digital ID, I should say. Mike, thank you. It's 8.33. Let's just quickly get some of the reactions on the emails and the texts. This comes in from, I've always loved this expression, Anthony in Hove. Remember the words of the late Ronald Reagan. The nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. I've always liked that one. Same subject. This comes in from Tom. I'm all for it if it's not mandatory. It could be useful for many people. But my 89-year-old grandpa, who regularly pocket dials the entire family's WhatsApp group, might struggle to navigate something like this. Not everybody needs to be in an app. Mark in Cardiff, the government will not give up on this snooping bill. They want control and access to people's bank accounts. Any politician you interview, ask them, do politicians and royalty have exemption from the system? The answer will tell you all you need. Well, I imagine royalty will have, but I'm damn certain politicians won't. Mark, was an idea. Duncan in Aberdeen, it maybe works in countries such as Estonia. However, this government couldn't run a bath. The public have zero trust in them to do anything correctly without the cost spiralling. Mike's in Bridgend. Mike, your view. Good morning.
I don't trust the government one bit. Basically, they had a lot of opposition to it. Now they're thinking, well, how can we go back at it? We'll have a people's panel. We'll do a massive fudge and we'll just keep bringing it in until basically it gets accepted. The idea that somebody from a Tony Blair think tank is in favour of it is not really, doesn't really warm my cockles. The government yesterday, I think, voted the first stage of a bill to take away the right jury trial in cases
where you
can be imprisoned for up to 3 years. You'll no longer have a right to elect for a jury trial in those circumstances.
Yes.
So the idea that the government is trying to protect our rights or improve our lives necessarily is absolutely for the birds, because in one fell swoop yesterday, they brought in some legislation which is going to remove a right we've had for centuries.
Well, they got closer to it, in fairness, but you're right. Certainly the progress is for the motion to be carried at the moment. Yes, you're correct there, Mike.
So 3 years is quite a long time to be in prison, for example. And so you've got the chance, in some cases, to say, I want my peers to decide my fate rather than a judge at the moment. They're removing that. It's pretty huge.
Let me talk you through what they say lastly, Mike. They say that once it's fully up and running, everything you need to run your life, if you seek to get a job, even when your car insurance, you could load that on your digital ID, that you need to pay your car insurance, that your TV license is expiring next month, whatever it might be, it could all be loaded onto the app, is what they would say, Mike.
I can do all those things currently with a few taps on my computer, because for any apps I want to join, I can join. I can do all those things. The difference is that they're bringing in something which will be all-encompassing in one spot, so there'll be very little actual choice. And the lady from the Tony Blair, who was used to work for Tony Blair Institute, said, well, you'll be able to go into the options and deselect certain options, but fundamentally, all your data will be held in one place. The optionality of it will be removed, just like they're trying to remove the optionality from most areas of life. I've been accused of a crime. Oh, I'm going to elect to go for a jury trial. No, you can't do that anymore because the government's just recently brought it. You can't do that. We're just going to be judged by a judge. I think the jacks of travel for the current government is appalling. And it's allegedly for somebody who was a human rights lawyer, who basically is all about the human rights. The person running our country seems insistent on taking them away.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. We're such a busy day, but we will come back to that jury trial, as you rightly say. Now, if that goes through, as Mike has put it far more eloquently than I can, if that goes through, you could get up to a 3-year stretch and you will not have been judged by your peers. You'll have been judged by professionals in the legal system. Well, we all know how they do, don't we? Guildford 4 and various others. Mike, thank you. Tim, you're on in a moment. Jim in Lincoln, having listened to the conversation, it's clear this government is going to press ahead regardless of what the public or indeed this laughable People's Panel says. This is about control and surveillance. Meanwhile, and I have been hunting for these, I have found one, Alex. No matter how much dinosaurs like you oppose it, you can't stop progress. Just as with digital banking, eventually non-compulsory adoption will reach a critical mass. Traditional ID options will be quietly dropped by both companies and government. Tim's in Rotherham. You like the idea. Why, Tim? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, hi. Look, I really like the idea, and I've just gone through something similar in the UAE where I applied to my Emirates ID.
Okay. Are you moving over there then?
No, I'm not moving over there, but I've just opened up a business out there.
Okay, right.
And to open a business, you have to be a citizen in the UAE. So, and I travel quite a lot between the two, actually.
Right.
I'm all for it, actually. And what is meant for me is that, particularly in the UAE, I can access all the public services through it and all of my historical records as well. Not that I'm married out there or anything, but you can access your marriage certificate through there. You can access any kind of county court judgments. You can access your driving license, insurance. It's all accessible through one single app. And I think it just makes it far more convenient. And as well, it links to other apps as well. So, for example, if you want to open a bank account, rather than you having to submit lots of bills and prove your identity, it links to the ID system and it digitally verifies you instantly as well. So it just makes life much more convenient, I think.
Are you able to tell me what level of support there was among the people in the UAE, or are you not living there so you can't really tap into that?
It's mandatory. So anybody that applies to be a citizen over, you have to go through the process, Nick. And it's very straightforward, actually. It's quite intrusive in that you have to have your bloods taken, you have to have an X-ray, your fingerprints. You have to go through a lot of biometrics first to get it. There's generally broad support.
Why do they need to take your blood?
From what I understand, I think that's a medical thing, actually. And they check to make sure, that you're fit and healthy. But I think both the bloods and the X-ray is to check that you're fit and healthy to get a view on what type of services you might be calling or want access to the public, the health service, I think, yeah.
But, right. What happened if the bloods were negative or you did have an illness? You're denied, are you?
Well, and one of my colleagues, actually, who wanted to go and live out there and work for me out there, had exactly that. So he had his bloods taken, and he had an extremely low immune system, or his immune system was extremely low, his antibodies, and on that basis, they refused him his ID and entry and his visa, work visa.
How fair is that, do you think?
I can see it from the individual's perspective. I think that's really tough. And for him personally, obviously, he was really disappointed. He was planning on moving his entire life out there to work out there. From their perspective and looking at it from ours, where we've got a heavily burdened NHS system that's in trouble and we can't seem to solve it, they're trying to prevent against that in some way, I think. So I can see it on both sides, really.
Lastly, you mentioned health. I'm not familiar with how health provision is provided in the UAE, but here in the UK, as explained by the Chief Secretary, you will need your digital ID as well as your passport, as well as your NHS app, so it won't link into NHS services. That can't make sense, can it?
No, I agree. It sounds like a bit of a half measure, actually, or maybe
I would suggest. Can I use the word it's a fudge, really? Either I can understand you need your physical passport, I get that, but surely your digital ID should have the whole nine yards, everything you need, your national insurance number, your national insurance number, your NHS number, your NHS provision, everything, and a passport. As it is, you're going to have to carry more.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Ian, and I think that goes down to communication and honesty as well, which seems to be a real challenge for this government at the moment. I think if they'd come out from the outset and said, look, this is the first step on the way to kind of true digitalization, this is what we're doing now and this is where we'd like to be, you can have that debate then all up front, really, and we all know where the intended journey is.
Great speaking with you. Good luck with your application to get to the UAE and the businesses that you're running. On the subject of what you'll have to carry, Ross says, so digital ID will combine with your passport, but you won't be able to use it for travel. How handy is that going to be? I think I agree with you, Ross. Gavin in Carlisle. Gavin, your view on this?
Nick, I don't really want to give a view on the IDs itself. I'm not really that bothered. But the way in which the government are approaching this is just amazing. This is the first big step forward for our democracy in you know, my whole lifetime. Like, this is proper mandate seeking. They're in office. They could just go, they've got such a majority, they could just go ahead and mandate this, make law. But instead of that, they're seeking a mandate. And they're seeking a mandate from a educated group of people, you know, by bringing together a people's assembly.
Well,
they're going to be able to...
What is the House of Commons, sir?
What is the House of Commons?
That's
do you really
that's
want me to answer that?
Well, that's a people... that we vote for people to be our representatives.
The representatives, yeah. I mean, look, they're not the most qualified of people, are they? I mean, most of them aren't qualified for that job. When you get
some
a load of...
Some have been local councillors. Anyway, go on, yeah.
Aren't most of them landlords? Aren't most of them lawyers? You know, they don't come from very similar backgrounds.
Well, I don't think on the Labour ranks. I mean, obviously you're going to have a lot of lawyers, but I don't know that everyone's a landlord on the Labour ranks, Gavin.
Oh, there's plenty of landlords on the Labour ranks as well.
So that means can't have a view if you're a landlord, does it?
No, what I'm saying is they all come from a lot of them come from the same background, yeah? And so when you...
Isn't the joy of it, not now, that you've got Sir Keir Starmer, who you're absolutely right, is a lawyer... I don't think he's a landlord, but comes from a deal. And then you've got Angela Rayner, who is the complete opposite. Isn't that the strength of the House of Commons?
Well, there is the parliamentary bubble as well. Once you're in that bubble for a while, you start to see things differently. Look, what they're going to do, this is brilliant. This is exciting. This is better than a referendum. You know, you're getting a load of people together from all different walks of life. You then, you give them some leadership in the form of some people from Parliament. They get to discuss this. They get to investigate it. They could say, right, well, you know what? I don't know enough to make a decision right now. And they could say, we want more input from experts in this particular field or that particular field. And then you end up with a real educated...
But lastly, Gavin, you heard the minister say they wouldn't necessarily accede to the view of the panel if it doesn't go their way.
Yeah, and absolutely, and that's democracy, yeah.
How can it be democracy if you put a people's panel together, the panel says, well, we've explored all the arguments, actually, we still don't hold with this idea of digital ID, and the government say, thanks very much, we'll take that on board, we're going ahead with it. That's not democracy, is it, Gavin?
Well, the panel may fail. They may be stubborn, they may be pig-headed, they may do no investigation at all, they may be lazy, yeah? So when they enter their recommendations, it might be an ill-informed recommendation.
All right. I've enjoyed our conversation, Gavin. Look after yourself. Thank you. Already got to those news headlines. It's a joyous day, says Gavin. He wants to see more of it, more of these sort of people's panels. You go to a country like Switzerland, they have referenda, on a regular basis. It's part of life in Switzerland. We might look at that. Back in the UK, coming up in the next hour, the Al-Quds demonstration, or Al-Quds Day is off, as hinted with me yesterday speaking, Minister for Courts and Legal Services, Sarah Sackman.
Those expressing support for the malign regime in Iran and the IRGC and its proxies have no place in our society. They shouldn't be on the streets of London.
Plus...
Money, 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 must be funny in the rich man's world.
The idea that Jane Austen will be taken off a banknote and replaced with a picture of an otter. Where's the sense and sensibility in that? 8:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A cargo ship is on fire near the Strait of Hormuz as the vital waterway becomes the latest flashpoint in the conflict in the Middle East. The Home Secretary has approved a police request to ban an apparently pro-Iranian regime march in London this weekend. And Sir Keir Starmer's top aide has told Nick the first files related to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington will be released later. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some bright spells developing later. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the A13 westbound to the M25 junction because a car's broken down. One lane is closed and it's slow all the way back to Grays, but the section of the A13 which was closed earlier, and this is at the Pitsea Flyover, has reopened, but it is still very slow. Very busy on the North Circular Road southbound to the Barking Flyover, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. There are delays on the M1 southbound, junction 11 at Dunstable South, but all the lanes are now back open. On the trains, London North West services aren't running between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey because of the overhead wire problems. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly and Central lines and minor delays on the Bakerloo and Northern.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig, tailored for you.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "All Change, Please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine, we'll return to our conversation concerning digital ID in this country in just a moment. But to events elsewhere, and we go to Switzerland. Police investigating a fire there. It's around 10 miles south, 10 miles or so away from Bern. And it's reported that after someone deliberately poured petrol over themselves, they then set a bus alight. Some footage of the event, captured obviously by a witness and uploaded on social media. It is thought that at least six people have lost their lives, injuring five others. Was it a deliberate act? Let's turn to Mark Butcher, who's presenter of World Radio Switzerland, joining us from Geneva. Good to have you on, Mark. What's the latest? What are police reporting now? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. What they're saying at the moment is, well, actually, the police really aren't saying very much at the moment. They've said there'll be a press conference at 2 o'clock Swiss time this afternoon. But the press is certainly running with that towards you just mentioned about the fact that someone set themselves on fire, poured petrol over themselves and set themselves on fire and on this bus. Now, we should say, point out the police are not really confirming that, but they're not denying it either. But witnesses say that's exactly what they saw happening. So we are seeing a situation where the country, Switzerland, is now in a state of disbelief and shock, because not only has this fire and these deaths, of course, come so soon after the tragedy in Crans-Montana, but we're actually seeing how can something like this happen in Switzerland, and what on earth was going on with this person who decided to do this horrendous act?
Can you tell us a little bit about the area? What do we know about, is it Kerzers? Is that how I pronounce it?
Yeah, Kerzers. It's in the Canton Fribourg, which is right on, in Switzerland, right on the linguistic line between German and French-speaking Switzerland. As you said earlier, it's not very far away from Bern. Small little place, actually. Small, quite rural little place. It's certainly not the sort of place you'd expect something like this to happen.
And police giving no indication until this press conference later today, Mark.
No, they're being very tight-lipped about the situation. They are saying they haven't identified the victims, not formally yet, and they are not really commenting on the reports of someone setting themselves on fire. Although, like I say, that does seem to be what happened, because everybody's saying that, and witnesses say they saw that happen. But they are saying they're asking the press to wait until this afternoon.
I've got to ask the question. You know what's coming. We don't know whether it is or in any way terror-related, obviously.
Well, we don't know for certain, although the police are certainly steering people away from that sort of talk at the moment. They really are saying that they don't see any evidence of that yet. But like I say, they're not really going to say anything more until later on this afternoon. But I will point out, Nick, I mean, the country woke up this morning to this news, and it is in a state of shock, because this is not something you'd expect to happen in Switzerland, nor in a small little rural town like Kersers.
Mark, good to speak to you again. Mark Butcher, presenter on World Radio Switzerland. As and when, of course, we get any updates on that tragedy, because it is a tragedy, innocent people losing their lives just travelling on a bus, and it is reported that some of the injuries, as you can imagine, are fairly high-level injuries, life-altering injuries. Well, if a bus catches a light because someone's thrown petrol around, it's not going to end well, is it? And if you see images of the bus, there is nothing left. It is just a hollowed-out shell, effectively. That's in Switzerland. 7 minutes before nine here in the UK. And we're talking about the idea of these digital IDs. Angela is in Hawkinge, which is in Kent, an area I know quite well. Hello, Angela. How's Hawkinge today?
It's sunny, thank goodness.
I love Hawkinge.
It's lovely. Yes, I just live down the road from the Battle of Britain Museum.
Oh, I know exactly where you are.
Yes.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant.
I listened to your programme and I thought, I've just got to ring in. It's just an exercise to waste public money. What happens when people don't want to comply with this? What do they do to them?
Nothing.
And also, yeah, exactly. And you've got all these illegal immigrants coming in. They won't want identity cards. They want to stay under the radar.
Well, this is the thing. Now, when it originally came in and it was proposed, it would mean that people such as those you identified would not be able to get employment because you would have to show. Now, it will not be mandatory to get
So what's the point? The money could be better spent on the police, the national health system, concentrate on this country and what's best for them, not a useless exercise, which is going to cost hundreds of thousands, millions, I don't know. It's just ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. This whole government's ridiculous.
Would you get one if it's not mandatory? As you've got your driver's license and if you want to open a new bank account, you've got a passport and some electricity bills or whatever it might be, would you bother with getting one, Angela?
No, what's the point? I'm 75.
Yes.
I don't want to get a job. You know, there's no reason for it.
Angela, look after yourself in God's own land of Kent. Thank you for that. Chandra in Newcastle. Chandra, your reaction. Good morning.
Very good morning, Nick.
Hello.
The actual act of collecting wider population's data is not the issue. I'm fearful of two things. The first thing, obviously, is somebody mentioned earlier this hour on your show about hacking. It is a real and a very, very serious issue.
Yes.
Various local authorities in the UK and NHS have been repeatedly hacked over the last decade.
Yes.
With extraordinary disruption. And the second issue.
Does that mean we never go in that field, though, Chandra? I hear what you say, but you're effectively switching off the chance of doing anything that might be run on a computer.
But the government has to demonstrate to its subjects that it has got the competence to deal with the hacking matter. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily need to know exactly how they'll do it, but they need to give us the confidence. There has to be some level of stress testing. And let me very quickly make this second point. The second point is many local authorities and even Whitehall use private organizations to assist them in delivering government services. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing we need to know, along with the government's competence in making this hacking proof, is the security protocol which they want to put in place to make sure that any individual or any organization that has access to population's personal data will not sell it on either open market or black market.
I hear what you say, Chandra. Final question to you. If it is not mandatory, that is, you can keep your passport, your driver's license, same thing I said to Angela, if you want to change bank accounts, they just need to see your gas bill. Would you get one, Chandra? Chandra? Chandra?
Who is not born in the UK? Hello,
you,
Nick.
Would you get one if you didn't have to, Chandra?
Who is not born in the UK? Someone who is an immigrant.
Sorry, I
don't have the option because...
Can you hear me? I think the line... I'm sorry, Chandra... this isn't working. So, Chandra, have a safe day. There's some kind of hitch on your line because you're not hearing what I say, so you're not even getting close to answering questions. Anyway, look after yourself. Sport talk again soon. 2:29 the time. Peter in Hamilton. Peter, would you get one if you didn't have to? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having my call. I would get it, no problem, because I've got one from Estonia and it works perfectly well.
Ah, you are Estonian?
Yes.
Ah, how fortunate. The government are holding Estonia up as the absolute, what they call, gold standard, the prime example of how this can function. Your reaction to that, sir?
Well, in Estonia, we had so-called ground zero. As soon as the Soviet Union collapsed, had to have our system, and we decided that we will have this digital ID. So it was mandatory for everyone. So, and it was very easy to implement. So it is implemented in every step of the way, so it's easy.
Absolutely everything is run off it, is it, Peter?
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely everything.
Okay. I mean, it took something as dramatic or drastic as the collapse of the Soviet Union for it to work. Do you think it could work in the United Kingdom?
Yes, of course. It's gonna work. And,
we're not at ground zero, though, are we? To use the brilliant way you described the collapse of the old Soviet Union, we're not at ground zero, are we, Peter? It would be different here, no?
Absolutely. So we're going to have to have a lot of time. So it's going to be done in stages because we've got a digital ID, so sort of rudimentary ones. We've got national insurance number. We've got unique taxpayer reference number. And it's all it's the same thing. So we just need to unify it. And
Peter, so useful that you called us having spoken with experience of living and having that card in Australia, because the government points to that as the country that it really does work. Peter, the music means we have to move on. Do stay in touch on other matters. Thank you for that. Coming up after the news, the march is off. Al-Quds Day, but is that the right decision? Don't go to university. Pick up a spanner and be a plumber. You'll get rich quick and...
money!
On the subject of money or cash, the idea that Sir Winston Churchill and Jane Austen will be switched for a badger and an otter? What's the thinking behind that? I'll explain later in the hour, but the 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Strait of Hormuz has again become a flashpoint in the conflict in the Middle East. A number of cargo ships have reportedly been damaged by unknown projectiles close to the vital shipping route. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has said that she's expecting the rate of inflation to go up as oil and gas exports from the Gulf drop. Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister is Darren Jones. He was asked by Nick this morning if plans to increase fuel duty from September will be reconsidered.
I can't say.
Well, how
that
else? It's due in September.
Yeah.
You agree you're not going to hold a budget in August. So, and unless you did it September the 1st or something, it's going to come in.
As I say, the Chancellor will have to announce it as part of a budget, which will happen around that time. But I don't have the authority today to tell you the precise date of the budget. That's for the Chancellor.
The Home Secretary has granted a police request to ban a pro-Palestinian march planned for London this Sunday. Organisers of the Al-Quds march had previously expressed support for Iran's late supreme leader. Shabana Mahmood says the ban is to prevent serious public disorder. Lord Walney used to advise the government on political violence.
Every year it ends up being essentially a festival of Jew hatred, which is, I think, is highly questionable at the best of times. But in this particular environment, it makes it all the more inappropriate.
The group behind the protest says it's always peaceful. Documents related to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington are expected to be released later. MPs ordered the government to publish the files over concerns about how he was vetted and what was known about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Lord Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing. Reforms of the court system in England and Wales have passed their first hurdle in the Commons. They include controversial proposals to limit jury trials in some cases to address rising backlogs. And the next series of banknotes will feature wildlife instead of figures from British history. The public will have a say on which animals will appear on the £5, £10, £20 and £50 notes, although the final decision will lie with the Governor of the Bank of England. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 80 at 10,334. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most, some bright spells developing later, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compresa Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after nine, Wednesday, March the 11th. The Al-Quds demonstration or march is off. The government approving a request from the Met to stop that on Sunday, as it was proposed. But is that the right decision? A denial of the ability to protest or to demonstrate on the streets of the United Kingdom? We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, farewell, possibly, to Jane Austen, Sir Winston Churchill, and other figures from our... Isn't Alan Turing on one of our banknotes? I think he is, isn't he? From our banknotes, as they're replaced with animals such as badgers and beavers. It's to offer, quotes, real diversity. What has a badger got that Jane Austen hasn't? We'll look at that in more detail. And... the real university challenge, that after going to university, getting your necessary degree, you can't get a job. You're forced, and there's nothing against this, you're forced to go and work in a coffee shop or hospitality, whatever it might be. Well, the advice now, get rich, be a plumber, be a tradesperson. We'll look at that in more detail later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's not without precedent, but it's pretty rare that they decide to ban a demonstration or a march, but the government are approving a request from the Met to ban a march due to take place in London on Sunday. Shabana Mahmood saying the ban was aimed at preventing, and I quote, serious public disorder at the annual Al-Quds Day march, which has always been seen as pro-Iranian. Of course, we have the conflict with the Iranian regime at the moment, but is also seen as a more pro-Palestinian event now as well. A stationary demonstration could take place, says the Home Secretary, but it would be policed under strict terms. Now, the Metropolitan Police are saying the threshold to ban a protest was high. The decision has not been taken lightly, but someone from the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Faisal Boudi, says it's a sad day for freedom of expression. Now, this was in the wind. If you've been listening to me over the last couple of weeks or so, I've been asking a series of ministers, I think even at one point the Foreign Secretary, who not that long ago was the Home Secretary, well, she declined to come on. Someone who was a little more outspoken was yesterday's minister. Sarah Sackman, who is a KC, is also Minister for Courts and Legal Services. And I asked her whether the march should proceed.
Well, I'm on record as having called out this march even before the current conflict in the Middle East. Those expressing support for the malign regime in Iran and the IRGC and its proxies have no place in our society. They shouldn't be on the streets of London calling for hate and hostility against this country. That's thoroughly anti-British, and I expect the police and the Home Secretary to take the necessary action against those people.
I.e. to ban the march, Minister?
Well, I think at the end of the day, that's a decision for the Home Secretary and the police. But I'm very clear that that kind of behaviour is not legitimate, and we should be doing everything we can to quash that kind of hatred on the streets of this country.
To Roy Ram, former commander for specialist operations in the Met, also headed up the flying squad and the serious and organised crime branch, and joins me now. Well, it was always going to be a bouncy day for the men and women brave enough to put on the uniform. It just got a whole lot bouncier, didn't it, Roy? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I mean, whenever these kinds of discussions arise about public order events, my mind goes back to one or two that I've had the displeasure of having to investigate the serious assaults on police officers, and who are inevitably the meat in these particular sandwiches. It's a highly contentious event. Whether it's a march or a static demonstration, there's going to be counter demonstrations. And I think that the commissioner was right. I mean, in the current atmosphere, how can it possibly be right to be holding a demonstration which is also supported by Hamas, Hezbollah, and people who are declared enemies of this country? So, yeah, try and ban it, but something will happen, and the cops will still be there, and it will still be an event that acts as a lightning rod for protest from certain groups.
You regularly comment on policing affairs for us on this show. Roy, can you give us an idea of how this decision would have been taken? Who will have spoken? What units will have spoken at the yard?
Yeah, I mean, this would have been a very careful discussion between not just the yard. I suspect that probably the security service as well, listening to what's going on in these kinds of communities that support call them dissident groups, Iran, the Palestinian and the dissident groups like Hezbollah and Hamas. It would have been intelligence driven. It would have come from Special Branch and probably from MI5 as well. They would have been looking at who's been involved in it, what's being said on social media in particular, and it would have been a discussion about the amount of resource it would need. Sentiment in the various communities would have been assessed very carefully. Ears and eyes on the ground in those communities to hear what planning was going on, and that would have all been factored in before Mark Rowley went to the Home Secretary and asked for this ban.
The organisers point to 40 years, they say, of peaceful marches, obviously coloured by events over the last couple of weeks in Iran. How much impact will they have? How much impact do they have on policing a city such as London?
I think that's a kind of a rosy view painted by them. It's not been, Al-Quds not been complete without its problems over the years and around the world. So, all of those factors will have been considered, but on balance, this is about London. This is about keeping London safe for Londoners and making sure that our police officers are not put into unnecessary jeopardy. And they would have all been factors very carefully considered.
Always enjoy speaking with you, Roy. Be well. Roy Ram, former commander for special operations in the Met, also headed up the flying squad and the Metropolitan Police's serious and organised crime branch. Listening to that, Jeff Pearson, who's professor of law at the University of Manchester, specialising in policing and human rights. Professor, the organisers, again quoting them, point to these powers not being used since 2012, and again saying in that time the Met has safely policed hundreds of protests from across the political spectrum. Is this an overreach? Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Nick. It's certainly unusual. The Metropolitan Police obviously has extensive experience of being able to police major high-profile protests and counter-protests. Normally that is done by the public order commanders for the event, deciding on conditions that are going to be applied if necessary to reduce the risk of disorder. So it's a highly unusual step that has been taken. I've been personally surprised to hear it, but ultimately I don't know the intelligence that the MPS received that made them make this request in the first place, because it's highly unusual for them to make that request as well, is my understanding.
Professor, isn't it the reality, as I was just speaking with a former senior police officer there, what was going to be a very testing time for the police officers on the ground now has just got even more testing, because the demo, the march, the protest in some way, shape or form will not go away, Professor?
I don't know enough of the group to know exactly how that will develop or whether there will be alternative marches. I believe that a static protest with extremely strict conditions may replace it, because that's something that falls under a different legal regime when it comes to banning. So difficult for me to be able to predict exactly what is going to happen. But ultimately, the police have obviously decided that the risks of serious public disorder, which is the test for the use of this power, are going to be lower by banning the march than by trying to put conditions upon it.
As someone who specialises in this field, when you hear one of the organisers say, and I quote, "It is a sad day for freedom of expression," you can have a sympathy. You might not be right fully in this instance, but you can have a degree of sympathy for the expression there, can't you, Professor?
I think it's always a sad day for freedom of expression and freedom of assembly when these type of decisions are taken. And I don't think they are taken lightly. You know, there are a lot of criticisms of both this government and the previous government for some of the laws that have been brought in which reduce freedom of expression and freedom of speech. But we are still not at a position in this country where we regularly ban people's right to march through the street and make their point, even if we do place conditions upon them. So I think it is a sad day, which isn't to say that it's necessarily the wrong decision.
Jeff Pearson, Professor at Royal University of Manchester, specialising in this field, thank you for your time. So the organisers say, again, a sad day for freedom of expression. They point out these powers have not been used since 2012, and the Met have subsequently safely policed hundreds of protests. And they also say the Islamic Human Rights Commission describes Al-Quds Day as an international demonstration in support of Palestinians and all the oppressed around the world. They say that it's been going on 40 years peacefully. Meanwhile, the Metropolitan Police point out that, in fact, Al-Quds marches in the past have resulted, and I quote, resulted in arrests for supporting terrorist organisations and anti-Semitic hate crime. It is, I say again, very rare, not without precedent, but is it right? Mark and Sandy, right or wrong? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think he's totally right, they've banned it. It's very rich for them to claim that, you know, it's a sad day for democracy when the very people that they're supporting and the regime in Iran and the IRGC have no respect for democracy and for the what seems to be about 85% of the Iranian population.
But do we have respect for democracy in this country if we ban this march?
Well, I think the thing is, you've got to think about it in a certain sense. In a way, we're already at war with Iran, even though they say the contrary. Can you imagine in the Second World War, if we'd said, well, actually, you know, the supporters in favour of Adolf Hitler going...
Well, we've not declared war with Iran, have we?
No, we haven't. We haven't declared war, but at a time when our own interests in Cyprus has been attacked, it may not be officially at war. But, you know, when you've got that kind of aggression taken against one of our own bases, I think it's crazy. I mean, they also support Hamas and Hezbollah. And these are people, again, that have inflicted a terrible war in the Middle East and on their own Palestinian people. So it's very contradictory and it's totally, totally right. In the streets of Britain, totally wrong.
Mark, thank you for your input. Rosalind, it's definitely not overreach. Why don't you support the decision? I haven't said I haven't. Andrew Sturton, if they had not banned the march and it had gone wrong, you would have destroyed the Home Secretary. Now it's been banned, you're going to destroy the Metropolitan Police. Weird. I haven't given my opinion yet. I've told you what the Islamic Human Rights Commission, who are organising it, have said. I've told you what the Home Secretary has said. And I've told you what the Met has said. And I'll give you my, with respect, everyone, I'll give you my view after the news, when we'll also be exploring... real university challenge. If you come out of your university with a glowing, glittering degree and you cannot get a job, the advice now is don't go to uni, learn about U-bends and plumbing instead. We'll tell you more on that after the news. 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The United States says it's destroyed 16 of Iran's mine-laying ships near the vital shipping route of the Strait of Hormuz. The government's approved a police request to ban a protest march in London this Sunday. And the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister has confirmed to Nick the first documents relating to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington will be released later. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Widespread sunny spells developing later. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the North Circular Road, westbound heading towards East Finchley. At the High Road, there's been an accident and two of the four lanes are closed. Couple of problems in North Finchley. Firstly, Woodside Park Road is closed eastbound for emergency works and Alexandra Grove is partially blocked in both directions because a bus has broken down. Now, on the trains, these problems do continue for London North Western. Still no services running between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey. It's because of problems with the overhead wires. On the underground, there are severe delays on the Central and Piccadilly lines. And then also on the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo and Northern lines.
This is LBC.
Left it late for Mother's Day. Don't worry, Moonpig's got ya. Because there's Mother's Day cards, and then there's Moonpig Mother's Day cards.
Aww.
You can add stickers, her favourite photos, even a message in your very own handwriting. Get it there with next day delivery. So there's no faff, no panic, and you'll still be the favourite. Plus, get 20% off when you use code MUM20. Because this Mother's Day, everyone deserves her.
Moonpig.com.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, so my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
BetMGM was born in Vegas, so just like the Cheltenham Festival, we know a thing or two about entertainment. Every ride, every race, every roar. This is Cheltenham, Vegas style. Sign up to BetMGM now. Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. That's right. Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. Are you ready for the greatest show on turf? BetMGM. It's showtime.
Minimum stake £10 and customers only. Wagering requirements and conditions apply. 18 plus. Please gamble responsibly.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look. That one's the plough.
Shooting star. Oh, wow.
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Get ahead, get a trade. Don't go to university. Become a plumber. That's what people are saying, and we'll pick up on that with a plumber in just a moment. But Katie in Watford's been hanging on the line for some time about this march that is to be banned. And I tell you why I'm very keen to speak with you. I understand you've attended it in the past. Is that right, Katie? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, I have attended the Al-Quds rally, and I have to say, I think it is different from your average pro-Palestinian rally, which obviously has been going on for a number of years. Mm-hmm. I think they're much more kind of nefarious type. There are more arrests from those kind of holding or supporting, holding banners or support. Well, there's a lot more kind of pro-terror, effectively. So those that are kind of expressing opinions either by their placards or by their chants for prescribed groups such as Hamas or Hezbollah. There are people who look, to my eyes, like IRGC types, kind of milling around and looking at what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's a far larger protest. It's also kind of the way it's located. It is kind of, you know, Oxford Street, Piccadilly Circus, obviously more prone to kind of tourist traffic. So it's a bit more intimidating for those who just want to be celebrating Mother's Day this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I think it's correct. I think given the situation in the Middle East, whilst freedom of expression, freedom of assembly are really important, I think the likelihood of clashes, which the police wouldn't be able to deal with, frankly, you know, there are fatwas saying that lone wolves or organised groups sponsored by the Iranian regime should take action. The Israeli government have issued guidance based on credible evidence that, you know, Jews and Israelis worldwide, and one assumes their allies, should take, you know, a lot of care.
Can I ask you something? I really enjoyed your assessment of it, and you sort of took me, and more importantly, you took my listeners there and what you witnessed. Why did you go? Are you a journalist or are you a writer on these affairs? What interests you?
I'm a lawyer.
I wanted to see what
the police were doing, really.
Okay. So, as a lawyer, you'll be aware more than many that this is a sort of breach of our supposed right to protest. But in this occasion, you're supportive of it, Katie.
They don't take it lightly. It hasn't been, you know, utilised for, you know, over a decade. I think in this situation, with that, marching kind of pro-freedom and suffering some abuse. There are other kind of groups, you know, obviously there are counter-protests usually, so Israelis, Jews and their allies. I think there are also potentially tensions with the Hindi community, potentially after that Holi event. And I just think the police really haven't got the capacity, with the best will in the world, to deal with it.
Katie, thank you. As a commentator who's been there also with your legal background, Aaron in Newcastle says, am I missing something here? They want to demonstrate their freedom of expression for a regime that bans freedom of expression. Aaron, I think I'm with Katie and with you. Now let's come to other matters. Almost half of young people believe learning a trade is a quicker route to earning a decent salary, a six-figure salary, £100,000, than going to university, according to a recent survey. They spoke with 2,000 adults under 28, almost half of whom thought training to be a plumber or electrician would lead to a six-figure salary faster than studying for a degree. And they've not even taken into account the story that you and I have done many times, and I will do again and again and again until all the time I have breath in my body, which is the extraordinary debt in which some of these young people are landed. £60,000, £70,000, £80,000 worth of debt. You don't go that if you go into a trade such as Sparks, electricians, Chippy, carpenter, or a plumber. Peter Booth is founder of PB Plumber and joins me now. Where are you based, Peter Booth? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I'm in Leicester.
Busy?
Yes, very busy.
You're not a Foxes fan, are you?
I am, unfortunately, yeah, but we did have a win last night.
Did you go yesterday, last night?
No, I didn't, no.
Do you reckon they'll just about survive, Peter?
I hope so.
That's a perennial Leicester. Oh, I hope so, me duck. I hope so, me duck. Right, tell me when you started plumbing. What sort of life has it given you?
Well, I started at 17, but family business. So my granddad and my dad were a plumber. And I think that's quite common. If you're in a family of trades, then that's your best route in, because it is very hard to get an apprenticeship. And it's always been very hard to get an apprenticeship.
Higher education never appealed. Going away, being with other 18, 19, 20, 20-year-old boys and girls, bit of fun, never appealed?
It did at the time. One of my mates were in halls and living that sort of experience. But because I took a year out, as soon as I started earning money, I didn't want to go back into the education system. So that's why I took on the apprenticeship.
How long have you been at it, Peter?
44 now. God. So what's that?
20-something years.
Yeah.
Is it giving you everything you want?
Yeah, and more. The amount of things you learn being a tradesperson on site, you pick up things from other trades. So I'm a plumber, gas engineer, but I'm competent with electrics, woodwork, everything, because you work with other skilled trades, so you pick a lot up. So it's great life skills, and as they always say, you'll never be out of a job.
You'll never be out of a job, but it's hard graft.
It's hard graft, and that figure of 100K it's not realistic. Most guys employed will be, depending on where you live, 30 to 50 if you get a good job. 100K is achievable if you're self-employed, but then you're not doing a 40-hour week. You're probably doing double that. So you're not really on 100K a year for the hours you work in. You finish work when you're self-employed. You don't go home and enjoy yourself and have time off.
Because when you're on holiday, you're paying twice, Peter.
Exactly. Your phone's always ringing. Sometimes you've got the anxiety of, have I got enough work coming in? Sometimes you're too busy to cope. It's not as easy as they make out in the paper.
So you're a 44-year-old bloke. You're the founder of a plumbing firm. Have you got children yet? Are they on the horizon? What's the story? You're a family man?
Personally, I've not got any children, no.
If you had nieces or nephews and they said, Uncle Peter, you seem to have a great job as a plumber. You seem happy enough. Shall I be a plumber? What would you say? Or shall I go to university? What would you say?
So my nephew Harry is currently doing his GCSEs. He does want to be a plumber or an electrician, and I would advise it because of how good it's been to me, but it's not going to be easy for him. So the trouble is, kids these days, what they see online and people pretending that they're making all this money and they're driving cars and, you know...
Mm. Get rich quick, yeah.
Yeah, so if you do take on a trade, you are going to have to work hard. And the trouble with taking on a trade is, the guys that are running companies, when they take on an apprentice, the apprentice isn't useful, and they put a lot of their time into training them up. And it costs money to train an apprentice.
Have you got an apprentice?
Elliot sat in the van. He's not my apprentice. He's Billy's apprentice, who I'm working with today. I picked him up this morning. He's 19.
Right.
He went into the trade.
So when you say whose apprentice is, did you say Billy's apprentice?
Billy, who I'm working with today on a job. I picked up the apprentice.
So there are three of you on this job today.
Three of us on the job today.
Got it. Okay, so this lad is not yours, but he's your mate's apprentice.
Yeah, he's 19, and he was struggling so much to find an employer that he almost lost his place at college.
Oh.
It is really hard to get someone to take on an apprentice these days.
Will he talk to me on the phone, young Elliot?
He will, yeah. I'll pass him over. I've briefed him.
Okay, brilliant. Hello, Elliot. You're right?
Yeah, you?
Yeah, not bad. You're a Leicester City fan?
Not really, no. Don't really watch football.
Well, you're taking the right decision there. Stick with the rugby. What made you want to be a plumber?
To be honest, it's just the money of uni.
Yeah.
That was the main thing, like the debt you get put in.
So if it had been in days past, where the debt you took on was like the low thousands, tens of thousands, but, or indeed was free, but now it's saddled with 70, 80. If it had been like a 10 grand debt, would you have looked at doing it, Elliot?
Yes, potentially.
What would you have studied?
I'm not sure.
What do you hope plumbing gives you?
Just a decent job, really.
What do you want from your job?
Just like to be like secure with money and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I feel like if you come out of uni and you've got a lot of debt, it could be quite like difficult to pay that back.
Oh, absolutely.
If you don't get the right job.
I've got colleagues here who are of shouldering debts of like £70,000. It's and I don't want to be rude to them, it's going to be a while before they pay that off. Have you got mates who say to you, Elliot, do you know what? I wish I'd never gone to bloody university. I've got more debt than you can shake a stick at. I wish I'd done a trade like you, Elliot.
Yeah, I've got a couple of mates who started at uni and they just stopped doing it because of, like, the worry of money in the future.
So how long is your apprenticeship?
Well, it was 4 years in total.
And ultimately, would you want your own business? Would you be happy to work for another company? What's your goal in, say, 4, 5, 6 years' time, Elliot?
The goal is definitely to own my own business, but I'm happy to work for another company whilst I'm learning, obviously.
Now, you're sort of subbed out today because you actually work for Billy, but does Peter know much about plumbing?
Yeah.
how much does he know of you, Ben, from whatever else it might have been? In all honesty, Elliot, it's just you and me talking. Is Peter Booth any good?
Yeah, he is good, yeah.
All right, listen, have a good day today. Give my best to Billy, who I won't speak to. Thank Peter Booth for me. Elliot, good luck to you. Peter Booth is founder of PB Plumbing, as in Peter Booth, P. Pepper, B. Bravo, who are to be found in the great city of Leicester. Peter, let's hope that result last night turns the tide. But we will come back to our conversation concerning that protest. I wanted to read this one here, Jason. Will, you'll be the caller as regards jobs, but can we do it the other side? I just read it, Jason. I went to university to study journalism. If I could turn the clock back, I would learn a trade, i.e. can't service a boiler, hammer nails or fit light switches. That's the reality, Jason. I was telling one of my colleagues I was crawling around on all fours, trying to fix a power shower the other day, and I've realised when you're my age, try to work your way around the back of a sink to get to the electric switch to make sure you don't blow yourself up. I'm much happier sitting in a radio studio, I have to tell you that. All right, we're going to talk about that. And after the news. Money, money, money. So farewell to the likes of Sir Winston Churchill, William Shakespeare, Jane Austen, J.M.W. Turner, and even codebreaker Alan Turing on our banknotes, as they are being replaced by beavers and otters and badgers to reflect real diversity. As I've said before, the sense and sensibility in that. It's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC The News. It's with Dominic Ellis.
The Strait of Hormuz has again become a flashpoint in the conflict in the Middle East. A number of cargo ships have reportedly been damaged this morning by unknown projectiles in the area. The US says it's destroyed 16 Iranian mine-laying ships near the vital trade route. The government has approved a police request to ban a protest march in London this weekend. There were concerns around the annual Al-Quds Day march over its apparent backing for Iran's late supreme leader. And the first files related to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington are set to be released later. Sir Keir Starmer's top aide, Darren Jones, has told Nick he will make a statement in the Commons this afternoon. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some sunny spells will develop by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
You want your car in good hands. With expertise, Halfords will keep it moving this spring with ease. You want your annual service ticked off. That's great. And in store, we'll fit batteries while you wait. You're never far from a garage or store for fitting, fixing, checks and more. You want mobile experts to fit tyres on your drive while you relax and take five to keep moving forwards with none of the fuss. You want Halfords, the name you can trust. Full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Check you're on track for a happy retirement with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up in praise of beaver and badger and otters, going on our banknotes. But Will's in Carlisle. Will, are you going to university? Have you got a trade? Which is it? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I work as a telecoms engineer, but I started off as soon as I left school. I went to college and done a plumbing course.
Yep.
But I was unable to.
How long was the course? How long would the course have been, Will?
It's just about less than a year. Mm-hmm. It teaches you the basics, and then you know all throughout that course.
I think that really would be the basics if they did it in a year, wouldn't it? Gosh.
Yeah. So, all throughout that course, you were told, "Oh, yeah." It's you'll never be out of the job. You'll be earning loads of money once you're out of the course and that. And then the next step was the apprenticeship, but it was so hard to get it. I never managed to get it. I was looking for about a year. I was labouring on site, just trying to meet plumbers.
Yep.
But they say there's no money in it, and it's one of the most common sayings I got. It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Okay, and how does that work in the world? I know it works in my world. How does it work in the world of plumbing?
What?
Who you know, it's who you know, not what you know.
Well, it's just...
You needed to know someone who could give you an apprenticeship, like a mate's dad, or your own dad, or an uncle, or something. Is that what we're driving at?
Well, yeah, for example, I'm trying to think. If you have a family member, who's a plumber, then you're
like an uncle or something like that. Then you're in.
Yeah.
Got it. So now you're a telecoms engineer. How long did it take to retrain?
Not too long. I mean, after the first year, I sort of gave up with plumbing, and then I moved on. I managed to just try different jobs here and there, and then I got into this, which I'm quite lucky, to be fair. So, you know.
And how much training did this require?
You don't need training for this. You know, they obviously train you up, but you don't need to come in with any experience. There isn't really any courses you can do to get into the job. So,
do you mind my asking sort of age you are?
19.
So have you got mates who did go to university and they're saying, "Will, you've no idea, I'm 20, 30 grand in debt, or I will be 30 grand in debt." What do they say to you?
No, to be fair, I don't know anyone that's been to university. Everyone round here's just been college. I think about half my course, less than half of my course that I done plumbing with, got their apprenticeships. You know, so it is bad. There's no support there for it.
Good luck with what you're achieving. Well done, Will, and you're in a field you enjoy. Tracy and Chester, you discussed this subject a lot, Nick. I'd like to ask you, would you have been happy to forego higher education and learn a trade? Would you have this aspiration for your own children or grandchildren? It seems people in a place of privilege seem very keen for the working classes not to aspire to be anything other than working class. I was on the streets of a part of London as a local paper reporter at 19, Tracy, chasing various stories and whatever else it was, trying to make stories work for me. So, I've been at it for a few years now. I just got into the job, as it were. Tracy, thank you. We'll come back to that. Right. Let me get my wallet out. Who's on what note? Here we go. So, oh, that's Queen Elizabeth. So, on the back of a £20 note, who's... I can't even see who this is. Who is that? Oh, it's Turner. So sorry, we've got Turner on the back of a £20 note. This is Jane... We've got Jane Austen on the back of a £10 note. I haven't got any others. Elsewhere, I think you can find Sir Winston Churchill, and am I right in thinking, I think Alan Turing, which all obviously speak to amazing advances in our history of this great nation. But they're all soon to be changed. Jane Austen will go, Sir Winston Churchill will go. Instead will come otters, badgers and beavers. Why? Well, apparently to reflect real diversity. This comes after the Bank of England announced last summer it was considering changing the theme of the images used on Britain's paper money. In a public consultation of 40,000 respondents, were you asked? No, nor me. Well, I wasn't even asked to be asked. I mean, I didn't even know about it. Nature was the top choice ahead of architecture and landmarks and notable historical figures. The bank has appointed a panel of wildlife experts to draw up a shortlist for native species for the public to choose from in a second consultation this summer. Do we really want to change Sir Winston Churchill for an otter? Tim Bonner is chief executive of the Countryside Alliance, and I know, I'm sure he, like me, will share the outrage. Tim Bonner, good morning. We don't want to say farewell to the greatest leader this country's ever had and put in a beaver, do we? Morning.
Oh, come on, Nick. The world is so miserable. Everything's going to hell in a handcart. We can be happy about some things.
Yes, Winston Churchill, he saved the world.
He did, and he'll still be there. But I bet he loved an otter. I mean, this is
prove it. How can you prove he loved an otter?
I'm damn sure he did. He's a sensible, upstanding man. He loved an otter and a roe deer and a trout and all the wildlife of Britain. And look, there is a serious point here that people love nature, and when they were asked, that's what they put at the top of the list. When we ask people, you know, what makes them proud to be British, they put the countryside right at the top, just beside the NHS. You know, this is a positive story, and we have so much misery in the world. Let's be positive. Yeah, our countryside is fantastic.
We may as well put Morecambe and Wise on a £10 note then, Tim, if you follow that line of thought.
Well, a roe deer is a hell of a lot prettier than Morecambe and Wise, and I think we all love those bits of nature we come across, and we have this fabulous countryside which has huge challenges because we're growing food on it. We need to build houses. You know, now we've got to have solar panels.
We can't build the otters. Don't build the houses, do they?
No, they're not that keen on houses. But look, they're a great success story. But, when I was a boy, which was not that long ago, no. If you wanted to see an otter, you practically had to go to the Orkney Islands. Now there's an otter in every river system in Britain. Let's celebrate that. Let's stick them on a banknote. And who can be unhappy about pulling out a tenner with an otter on it?
Lastly, if I were to take you to the United States, I think, and I'm going to ask some of my American listeners to vouch this, I think Lincoln's been on there for generations and various others, and they just never change. And I know you're not the author of change here, I appreciate that, but why the necessity to change?
Well, look, it's a bit of fun, isn't it? There's a 50p piece with a salmon on it, which is incredibly popular. Apparently, if you find one, you can sell it for £2. I'm not quite sure how that works.
What did you say is on that 50p piece? Sorry.
It's a salmon. It's a salmon.
Really?
One of the great migratory fish of the world. And they're collector's items because people love them so much. So why not spread a bit of happiness? And of course, we celebrate the great men and women of our history. But why not celebrate the wildlife as well?
Let's see what others make of your argument, Tim. Thanks for you, Tim Bonner, Chief Executive of the Countryside Alliance. Let's have a bit of celebration. I'm grateful to Joe. Scotland's money has had otters on it for ages, and we like it. Oh, Joe, do tell me, what note is that? And have you got other animals on other notes? I really want to hear. I'm afraid I'm not familiar. Last time I had Scottish banknotes was when I went to see England get beaten in Edinburgh. I mean, England just get... I just go around parts of Europe seeing the England rugby team get beaten. And I was in Murrayfield, so I was in Edinburgh. That was the last time I had Scottish notes in my wallet. So I'd love you to tell me. Anyway, Andrew in Deptford wants to talk about notes. Andrew, do we celebrate this as this is great and a bit of humour and lifting the mood or a strange reflection on modern times? Good morning.
Good morning. It's another effort with Labour to erase our history and to get rid of our islandness and to get rid of anything. It's a dumbing down of the nation.
Oh, wow.
We should be proud of our history. We should be proud of Jane Austen. We should be proud of all the things that we have achieved in history. The kids of today, they look at the notes and say, "Well, who is this?" And they can find out who this is. They will not look at a badger and say, "Oh, where's that come from? What is this?" It's a whole dumbing down of anything to do to do with Britain.
Well, it's would you rather look at Sir Winston Churchill or a beaver?
Oh, I think a beaver is so much more educational and has so much more history than Winston Churchill.
Well, then you're arguing in favour of the change.
No, I'm being sarcastic.
Oh, I see. I'm so sorry.
Winston Churchill. If you ask any of the kids of today, a lot of them won't know who the heck he is.
Actually, some won't, but we did that quite recently, and it was a little better than perhaps one might have thought where it might be. Andrew, thank you for that. Here we go. Thank you very much. Leslie is telling me it's on a Scottish £20 note. Here we go. Thanks very much indeed to Rachel. Scottish banknotes have otters, ospreys and red squirrels. Otters, ospreys and red squirrels. Grateful for that. I don't know what else happens. Anybody got some dollar bills on them? Because I think Lincoln, in fact, I think Lincoln's been on the dollar bills like forever. And I'm trying to think who else. Is Roosevelt on one? Oh, Washington. George Washington. GWGWB, that's the bridge. George Washington, Lincoln, Roosevelt, Hamilton? Is he in the room when it happens? Find out for me. Let's talk jobs with Chris in Grimsby. Are you in work, Chris? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. You'll have to excuse me. I've got a terrible cold at the moment. So,
don't worry. What is it you do?
I'm a gas engineer. I've been for many, many, many years now, and I wouldn't advocate my 14-year-old son going into any of the trades. I'm currently on my third fire and rehire in 6 years, driving down terms and conditions. So I'm leaving the industry now, and I will not miss it one tiny bit. I've worked at British Gas. They conducted a fire.
I remember that.
I was
awful.
One of the gas engineers. Now work for a small local housing association now, and they're conducting a fire and rehire, driving down workers' terms and conditions.
Why do they always go for you guys?
I think we're low-hanging fruit, I think. It's easy to bring these sort of consultancy firms in that make cuts, making you do more and more for less and less. I'm pretty much on the same money as I was 2008 while I was employed at British Gas.
What are you going to do?
I'm considering sort of moving jobs at the moment, which it won't be in this industry.
No, but might I ask what you're looking at, what you might do?
I prefer not to say at the moment, I've got a couple of irons in the fire.
Yeah, okay.
But my daughter's at university at the moment, so I can see it from both sides. I've got a son of 14.
Do you have any idea what sort of debt your daughter might be getting into by the time she finishes up there?
It is. We're trying to keep the worst of it off her at the moment, but it is astronomical with the obviously the course fees and also the accommodation and living costs. And obviously, she's in a one bedroom place, and the rent for that place, not including bills, is astronomical. So we try and keep the worst of it off her.
Let me ask you this. How fully supportive were you, Dad, of your daughter going off to university? Or did you say to her, you know what, honey, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. But beware, you could have thousands and thousands and thousands of debt. What did you say?
We will do everything in our power to get my daughter through to a position where the people I'm dealing with now, who are firing and rehiring me, all went to university. I wouldn't advocate treating people like we've been treated during this dispute and previous ones, but I will do everything in my power. If I work until I drop, I will make sure she's in a position where she gets a university degree. She maybe goes on to a master's or something like that, because in the long run, her life has a bigger proportion of being better than what mine has been in the last 10 years.
I hope you get your post in, whatever else it is you're pursuing. I understand totally you don't want to share. Good luck, obviously, to your daughter and to your lad that you mentioned as well. Thank you. Thanks also to Michael and others who's sending me that we have George Washington. Do they change pictures on the US dollar bills? George Washington is on the $1 bill. He's been there since 1869. I mean, doesn't that tell you everything? Abraham Lincoln is on the $5 bill. He's been there since 1914. Why do we have to... Others featured include Alexander Hamilton, who was, of course, in the room when it happened, and Andrew Jackson and Benjamin Franklin. So it's all former presidents. Why are we about the otters and Jane Austen? What is going on here? We might have more on that. It's 9:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
At least three cargo ships have been hit as the Strait of Hormuz has again become a flashpoint in the conflict in the Middle East. The Home Secretary has approved a police request to ban Sunday's pro-Palestinian Al-Quds Day march in London. And the first files related to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington are set to be released later. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some sunny spells will develop by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M3 southbound just after the M25 junction. A car's broken down, so one lane is closed. In Waltham Abbey, it's very busy on Highbridge Street going westbound, and that's following an accident. On the North Circular Road, westbound queues from New South Gate heading up towards Coney Hatch Interchange, and that's because of an accident. Also, the problems continue on the Underground. There are severe delays on the Central Line. This is after a signal failure that happened earlier at Bethnal Green, and also minor delays on the Northern Bakerloo and Piccadilly lines. On the trains, London Northwestern services are suspended between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey because a tree has fallen onto the overhead wires.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Change is in the air. I don't mean the humiliating reverse ferrets by various right-wingers. I mean the Iranian people having second thoughts about this war.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern. For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Farewell, Sir Winston Churchill. Bring on an otter, possibly, to our banknotes. Aggie's in Bristol. Would you celebrate this, Aggie? Morning.
Hi, morning, Nick. Yeah. I am celebrating that. That's because I'm an environmental communicator and I'm a strong advocate for nature. And would you believe I'm currently on my way to a beaver release?
A beaver release?
That's what a beaver sounds like, Aggie.
That is not a sound of a beaver, I don't believe.
Well, I think it is. I've just been told that is a beaver. Anyway, tell me what a beaver release is. Where are they releasing them?
So, I'm going to keep it fairly mysterious because we're not announcing this until the 7th of April, which is the International Beaver Day.
Oh, I love International Beaver Day.
Yeah, exactly. But it will be some of the first beavers in over 400 years in Bedfordshire. But
okay.
I would like to tell you...
Why can't you... Just out of interest, and I don't want to get anyone in trouble, why aren't you allowed to tell me where the beaver is?
Oh, that's because we're just keeping the location secret until we actually release the official
press release. Are you frightened
of
people try and steal the beavers?
No, we're not afraid of people stealing the beavers because the beavers are in a secured pen and fenced sort of area.
But if they can't snatch the beaver, what's the concern?
Of me talking about it? Well, it's because we're keeping it under embargo. So
Okay. What do you hope the beavers will achieve?
So the beavers, the main sort of message around beavers is that they're incredible ecosystem engineers. So if we can talk about beavers as our allies in helping us fight some of the crises we're facing,
okay.
They're incredible in helping us tackle biodiversity crisis, climate change, and also flood risk. So these are the three or even four, I would add drought as another one, that they're incredible at helping us
tackle. Well, I hope
tackle.
It goes well, but in the achievements of this great nation, can I suggest that perhaps... we look at what Sir Winston Churchill did more than a beaver?
Yes, but Nick, isn't that sort of looking to the past?
Yes.
And we are currently facing quite significant troubles that we need to deal
Indeed.
With fairly urgently. And what I think this poses as an opportunity for Britain that is, as you mentioned, a nation of nature lovers,
yep.
but it's also one of the most nature-depleted countries in Europe and in the world. So what we have is a problem, but also an opportunity. So if we allow nature to trickle into the mainstream and really spread the idea that this is our tool and our solution for the problem that we're currently facing, we, by collectively subscribing to supporting this, we
yes.
can actually turn things around.
I sense, lastly, of all the wild animals, you really love beaver the most.
Well... I don't know if I personally love beaver the most, but they're actually in this country that you know, this Britain is an island.
Mm.
So without getting into too much detail over what animals can or can't or people are willing to accept or not, in Europe animals spread naturally. In Britain, that cannot happen because obviously mammals cannot cross the English Channel naturally, so we have to bring them. And beavers
okay.
are one of those incredible keystone species that offers so much for our natural environment and that have been publicly accepted.
How fantastic. Well, I hope you... Remind me, did you say next month is International Beaver Day? What is the day?
7th of April.
I hope it goes well today, and then when you're ready to tell the world about us, perhaps you'd like to give us a call back, Aggie. Safe travel to that part. I won't even say the county again, so that we don't compromise you in any way. Shall we come back to jobs and the advice that everyone should go and get a trade rather than go to university? Stuart says, in connection with this, I've been working as a photographer and cinematographer for the best part of 25 years. 2 years ago, I took myself back to school to get my City and Guilds as an electrician. It was a brilliant move. I'm now doing jobs all around the neighbourhood in gaps that currently exist due to reduced productivity within our TV and film industry. Meanwhile, Robert says, last week I put my car in for a service. I was shocked when I saw the mechanic's hourly rate was £85. My son attended a Russell Group University, got a first-class honours degree in accounting and finance. He's now working as an accountant for an energy company. He doesn't earn £85 an hour. All I would say to that, Robert, is, and notwithstanding the importance of your son's education and indeed the importance of preparing the books for companies or individuals, the responsibility of looking after someone's car and making sure the brakes work or whatever else it might be is pretty strong as well. So, of course, your son's in an important position, and if he's not careful, he could give advice that could bankrupt a company, but... don't let's knock those engineers who are keeping the wheels safely turning. Shall we talk jobs with Ed in Glasgow? Ed, what's your story? Good morning.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
I'm well. Tell me about what work you're in or hoping to get.
Yeah, so I am a renewable energy consultant.
Right.
So I've kind of gone too much the other way. I'm sort of overeducated university-wise.
Okay, go on. In what way?
So I started off Bachelor's of Maths at Edinburgh. And that was just an all-round terrible time.
I'm so sorry.
It was poorly taught. I wasn't, you know, even from myself, I wasn't mature enough for it.
Right.
I only did it because basically my dad said, oh, you can't go wrong with maths, jack of all trades.
Oh, God, right.
But obviously that means master of none. So when you go to interviews,
yeah, like,
well, we could take a punt on this mathematician, or we could have someone who's specialised already, in theory.
But maths is meant to be sort of the framework for everything. Well, I've read that. I don't know. I was bloody hopeless at it at school. But isn't it meant to be the framework for everything?
Well, yeah, it's the kind of the fundamental language of the cosmos.
That's it. Yeah. But it doesn't help you get a
but
job.
Yeah, you try that in an interview, trying to show you all fancy graphs and that. So I was unemployed for the best part of a year, straight out of uni.
That's not good. Right.
And I eventually lucked out in this solar panel place that was just up the road.
Mm.
And I liked that, so I worked there for 4 years. And then I retrained. I went back for a master's in renewable energy.
Mm.
And then that led into a PhD in electrical engineering for wind turbines. And those latter two degrees were excellent. You know, I was ready for it. I did really well. I got a distinction. PhD.
So, come on, if you had your time over, what would you do?
If I had my time over, I would wait. I would not just immediately go to university straight out of school because, you know, I don't think anyone knows what they want at that point.
Right.
At least none of my mates did. And also, it's worthless. A bachelor's at the minute is, you know, there's so many of them.
There's no, yeah. The value is gone.
You come out and you're just a drop in the ocean. So,
I wish you well on the jobs front. It is damn tough. Ed, thank you. Good luck. At least you've, as you say, lucked out in that particular area. One last one, if we're quick. Rachel in Swaffham. Rachel, are you a product of university? Did you go straight into a trade? What's the story, Rachel?
Good morning, Nick. No, hello. I was very academic, got top A-level grades, didn't go university. I did a bilingual secretarial course for 1 year after my A-levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I now work as an executive assistant to a CEO. I've done that kind of PA, EA work all my life. I'm very happy.
Personal assistant,
I've
executive assistant. Yeah. So what is your career progression? Where do you want to end up, or are you very happy where you are?
I'm happy where I am because I'm 50 now, but I've loved my career. I've loved my career. It's given me a lot of flexibility. I've worked with some amazing individuals. I've seen a lot. I've heard a lot. It's a great job, and I don't regret it at all. I came out with no debt, and it's...
Do you mind asking briefly, if you had children, would you have the same advice for them?
I would, because there are jobs now in London working for high-net-worth individuals, 24/7 PAs who can earn 70,000-80,000 a year.
And that's no chump change, as they say. Rachel, I have to leave it there, but we did get your main story on. Well done with the career that you've put together. I'm done for today. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the LBC app free from your app store now. That's it for today. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and while we thought this would happen, we didn't think it would happen quite this quickly. The Financial Times reports today on Iranians in Iran who are rethinking their support for Donald Trump's intervention and indeed rethinking the price of possible, but now incredibly unlikely, regime change. While in the UK, Nazanin Zaghari-Ratcliffe is one of three former political prisoners in Iran to join more than 100 Iranians living here who are now urging Keir Starmer not to get drawn further into the Iran conflict. It is, of course, the last platform of plausibility that the warmongers were clinging to, but it looks as though many Iranians are now changing their minds.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, at least three cargo ships have been hit as the Strait of Hormuz has again become a flashpoint in the conflict in the Middle East. It's unclear who fired the projectiles, but Iran has threatened to fire on any vessel in the strait. The shipping lane is a vital artery for oil supplies and is effectively being closed since the start of the conflict. Middle East correspondent for The Economist, Greg Karlstrom, is following developments for LBC.
The Americans saying overnight that they believe the Iranians have started to lay down some mines, some naval mines in the strait. Not a large number, but an attempt to physically block traffic through the strait. Huge concerns in energy markets.
Ministers are warning their ability to shield taxpayers from higher energy bills could depend on how long the war continues. The Chancellor has said that she is expecting the rate of inflation to increase as oil and gas exports from the Gulf drop. In the last few minutes, Rachel Reeves has been speaking to the Treasury Committee. She said it's not good for the British economy to have trade disrupted.
At this stage, I think it would be unwise to speculate on what the impact on inflation, growth or interest rates would be. But, of course, we are looking at a number of scenarios and monitoring very carefully the situation. But the quicker we can de-escalate, the better it will be for all of those different economic variables.
The government has approved a police request to ban a protest march in London this weekend. There were concerns about the annual Al-Quds Day march over its apparent backing for Iran's late supreme leader. Organisers insist it's always been peaceful. The first documents relating to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to Washington will be released by Downing Street later. There have been questions over how the peer was vetted and what was known about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Lord Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing. And Heathrow says it's recorded its busiest February on record last month. 5.8 million passengers passed through the airport. It says it benefited from a bumper half term combined with Chinese New Year travel. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 99 at 10,312. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most. Some brighter spells will develop by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, we get through so many snacks. Have you got anything to help me save?
Well, we're always matching and lowering prices. So hundreds of Sainsbury's fresh fruit, veg and everyday products are price matched to Aldi. And every week with Nectar, you can save money on thousands of the products your family loves. So you can snack away knowing you're saving money. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. Selected products, Aldi price match not in NI. Nectar prices require Nectar account. Terms at sainsburys.co.uk/Aldi price match and nectar.com/prices terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. Would it be childish and inappropriate? Or would it be a welcome slice of levity in an otherwise unbearably serious sea of news to use today's programme, at least in part, to anoint King or Queen Ferret? I mean the public figure. I suppose this is following on from Nick's theme about beavers and otters. I'd like to introduce ferrets to the equation, specifically that lesser-spotted reverse ferret, or in the case of our right-wing media this week, the greater-spotted reverse ferret. But we would anoint King or Queen Ferret, as in the public figure who is either most assiduously ignoring the opinion they held about Donald Trump's war in Iran last week, or abandoning it and ploughing ahead, regardless, in entirely the opposite direction. I've got four contenders for you at the moment for the title of King or Queen Ferret. Kemi Badenoch is very much in the field. Nigel Farage, inevitably, has found himself blowing in the wind like an entirely unreliable and unprincipled charlatan. Perish the thought. Andrew Neil in the Daily Mail, as we suggested may occur, has undergone an extraordinary sea change. And Richard, call me Dick Littlejohn, in the Daily Mail, is so ashamed to be British that he stopped writing about the war entirely and started writing instead about lollipop ladies. So I don't know. Who is the king or the queen of the ferrets, the reverse ferrets? We may play that game a little later in the programme. Would you like to play another game as well? This is a bit niche, all right? If you've got no idea what you're listening to, you've accidentally tuned in your radio, or you have no clue who I am, which is a perfectly reasonable and probably an enviable position in which to find yourself, then just to forgive me and indulge me for a moment. I got very excited yesterday about the fact that Eleanor laminated my Chilcot checklist. It normally takes me months to have my requests met, if indeed they are ever met at all on this programme, such as the torpor of the production process on this programme. All the others get whatever they want within 10 minutes. But I got my Chilcot checklist laminated within less than 24 hours. And I mean... I have it with me now, so I don't want you to worry. Laminated. I've got some other laminated things as well that Eleanor did for me for reasons I'm not entirely clear about, but I'll tell you what else she laminated. Is there an episode of a sitcom where they just laminate everything? I remember Phoebe's brother in Friends just liked melting things. Do you remember Phoebe's brother in Friends just liked melting things? They said to him, what do you do? Do you have any hobbies? And he said, yeah, I like melting things. Eleanor, it seems, just likes laminating things. So I'll tell you some of the other things she's laminated later in the programme. But I got very excited yesterday about my laminates. How long do you think it took me to lose it? Had I lost my laminate, which I have now recovered, I want to make that clear. Do you think that I lost it after 6 hours, 5 hours, or 4 hours? How long do you think it took me to lose my laminate? Yes, that is a game you are welcome to play. So we've got ferrets, we've got laminates, and now we have the business proper. And the business proper begins in really uncomfortable territory this morning. I don't know if you can tell when I am not super comfortable on the radio. It's my privilege, I suppose, to form my own opinions on the whetstone of your knowledge. Quite a lot of the views that I hold most dear are born of conversations that I've had with you over the years, sometimes quite heated conversations. There is nothing like an argument to either convince you or dissuade you from a position that you previously held. But sometimes I've got an opinion and I am very authentic in holding it, but I am a little bit uncomfortable defending it against people who have more skin in the game. Does that make sense? So there were a couple of occasions last week when people of Iranian heritage were telling me how pleased they were about the attacks upon their home country. And I felt very uncomfortable arguing that they shouldn't be pleased. I didn't resile from the position. I didn't bottle it, but I certainly didn't go in anywhere near as hard as I would do in other circumstances of disagreement. And I think that's the right thing to do. You know, I sometimes finish phone calls thinking I've been too soft on someone, and I sometimes finish phone calls thinking I've been too hard on someone. But mostly I finish phone calls thinking I reckon we got that about right. But arguing with somebody with family in Iran, with history in Iran, with loved ones in Iran, friends, family, arguing with someone Iranian about an attack upon their own country and trying to tell them, if they welcomed it, that they shouldn't, that's about as close as I get to profound discomfort in the context of conversations, because I found myself increasingly drawn to the observation that you're trusting the wrong people, regardless of your hunger for regime change and regardless of the horrific nature of that regime. Trump isn't going to be your friend. Donald Trump isn't anybody's friend. Benjamin Netanyahu certainly isn't going to be your friend. These people, these men, are not people you should be entrusting with your